You jokers ready to
pick up the pineapple, as they say?
Certainly.
Big episode.
It is a huge episode, you guys. Like, I have pages and pages of notes, and we haven't even fucking watched the movie yet.
Normally, I'm the one who comes in, and I have a lot of prepared...
No, I've got cards and notes.
Yeah, I know. I'm normally the one who has so much prepared material, and you guys really went all out because you know what's in store for tonight. And you have the inside scoop on what's really going on that people need to know about. Because I don't have a
this
clue.
This is a vital, this is a vital episode for everyone out there who's, well, living in our universe, I think.
Yeah, it is, because what's important about tonight's show, one of the things, is it's a follow-up to a show we did a few months ago, starting off a chain of events, which has reached the globe and has changed things for a lot of people.
So far.
It's our most listened to episode. It's one of our most popular episodes, if not the most popular episode.
But see, the thing is, we were already planning on having it be a small piece to a bigger part of the puzzle. So this
but people
week,
caught on because we did such a good job
great
of conveying
that, it. Coincidentally, really is like the most popular episode, and it is part of this grand scheme that we got planned. So that really is fortunate for us.
I mean, this is we talked about it last time, and I don't want to freak anyone out, but this is the year of the Aykroyd Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And,
we're talking, of course, about the Aykroyd Awards and the Aykroyd the arrival. Of the Aykroyd Christ, and just there's some shady stuff going on in your neck of the woods that you need to know about.
That's true.
I'm John Shalda, here to give you the news about the Aykroyd, everything you need to know about the man.
I'm Brother Brett.
I'm Sam with weather.
And we're all here.
It's gonna
tonight.
Get dark, baby.
Yeah, if we had music on the show, he would introduce himself like.
Hey, it's your old friend the Trickster, but you can call me T. Trickster. I'll just be around.
Trickster knocked over the sacred skull, full of the essence of Dan Aykroyd himself.
Shh, the Trickster's tipsy. The tipster.
Trickster drank all of the...
triple Herkimer diamond filtered deep aqua duck Newfoundland...
Pure spirit vodka?
Pure spirit vodka.
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, you dick. Like,
heart and soul.
We bought the sacraments this week for
consumption.
For the, yeah, so we could do another whatever the fuck. I'm forgetting every religious word I know. But yeah, we were gonna bathe in the Aykroyd juice this week.
Well, the Trickster appreciates it because he's a little drunk.
These tiny skulls are like $7.99, you dick. But at least we have it. We have it adorning our microphone. So now everything that is said is actually being filtered through the crystal head.
No, I like that. Head. I like that. We actually have the tiny miniature Dan Aykroyd crystal skull vodka container on our mic, and I believe it's going to make this the most powerful episode we've ever recorded.
You guys know I'm good for it, though. Just put it on my tea tab.
Very funny. Very funny, T. We can always count on you for a laugh. Once again, I tricked myself by introducing the Trickster.
Yeah, once again, the trick was on us.
We have so many big things to get into
tonight.
The
Trickster wants to be on you.
Corey Feldman, you know, we got busy with those damn dirty summer games, and we forgot about the important things, like what Corey Feldman has been up to this summer, and that's something that indirectly ties into what Dan Aykroyd is and knows and who he is as a person.
That's true.
And we'll tell you why, and it'll chill you to the bone.
Are we going to tell them why now? We're going to tell them...
We're going to wait. Make them wait.
Okay, good.
We're going to make them come back for more.
Yeah, all right.
No.
So we're just teasing them with things to come.
The audience.
Yeah, hopefully you'll reach orgasm once this is over. Because this is a very erotic film.
We are watching a movie.
Oddly enough, we are watching.
Yeah,
a movie
I forgot
tonight.
All about that movie we were watching.
Yeah, I'm all prepped up for this podcast and like with alien talk and this and that. And like,
unfortunately,
I basically know nothing about this movie that I'm sure has nothing to do with aliens.
Oh.
Well, we should give the movie its due because it is a very important part of this show. And something that we should talk about, we did some rehearsal shows for the Dizzy Ramblers, some of them before Brett even came along, and this movie we're watching was one of the early episodes, and hopefully we can do it better justice than we did then. Me and Sam had quite a different opinion of that movie that day. The movie is, of course, Sam
Neighbors. John G. Avildsen's 1981 classic starring Aykroyd and John Belushi.
This is you kind of undersold it, but this is one of John Belushi's only movies.
John Belushi's final movie.
Yeah. And is it his last one?
That is correct. Okay. That is correct, sir.
And, you know, most people haven't heard or seen this one because it did so badly that it just, like...
Well, that's not necessarily true. Critically reviled, yes.
Yeah.
Box office success.
Was it?
Well.
Well, I know my dad talks about it.
Was it? Mm-hmm. Lots of people saw it. I think my parents saw it in theaters. Your dad
My
saw
dad,
it
it's a, we have a lot of history with this movie. He's always told me I should watch it and I might like it. And then I watched it with Sam and I hated it. And
it made $28 million
in
the box offices in the U.S. that summer, and... It was. It only cost $8 million to make. So
why isn't it on DVD?
That's the thing, Brett. It's not on DVD. Wouldn't you think it would be with Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi being in it and all?
Oh, definitely.
Like in prime Aykroyd too. We're not talking about like 2000s. We're talking about like 1981, fresh, hot off SNL,
right off Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
Well, I predict this is going to be a great episode because the best episodes come from movies that aren't available on DVD.
That's true.
Yeah, you're right.
Things are about to get crazy.
So, Brett, you have two paths to choose. You can go the right way, which is me, by hating this movie, or you can go the wrong way, and the more likely way you'll go, which is the wrong way towards Sam, which is loving it.
It's a great movie. I'd say it's a Dan Aykroyd movie I love.
Brett, I would not be surprised if you hated it. I also wouldn't be surprised if you liked it.
Yes, there are two paths you can go on, but in the long run, Brett, there's still time to change the road you're on. Just feel free to enjoy it as much as you can throughout. If you're not enjoying it, just go with the flow.
At the very least, it is a very odd movie, and it's a very interesting movie to watch. It's not boring.
I honestly expect to love it, so we'll see how it goes. Because
don't you expect to love every movie we go into on these?
When it's movies that like aren't available on DVD, I expect to love it. And like if it's like hated by critics, I expect to love it.
Mm.
And if it's hated by fans, I expect to love it. But
See this.
I just like bad movies. That's what it is. I like stupid, bad, boring movies.
Well, you'll love this. No, but yeah, the studio like rushed it out so it could get out before critical reaction, and like it was like one of the biggest movie openings of all time, actually. Because they wanted to open it like everywhere so people wouldn't, like, word of mouth wouldn't spread and everyone wouldn't completely hate it, and that's what happened. It was a success because of that.
What we haven't talked about yet, we've talked about everything but this, the Aykroyd Awards.
Oh, wow.
We introduced this last time when we introduced Dan Aykroyd and his conspiracies to the audience and to ourselves. We really dove into it, really got deep in that world. I know we haven't really been able to climb out of it. And we're going to be watching two more Dan Aykroyd movies this year. Probably better than the... Well, maybe not Exit to Eden.
I expect this to be the best out of all the Dan Aykroyd movies we've watched this year.
No, our final Dan Aykroyd movie, Dr. Detroit, will be the best. Brett, you're going to have to explain the rules when we come back to the Aykroyd Awards contest to get your own Aykroyd Award prize, because no one else... We all know the rules. We've all heard the rules. But neither me or Sam can explain the rules. And you're the only one who can actually interpret that dialect for us and break down those hieroglyphics and, you know, really... gel with the audience.
All right, starting this episode, we're gonna be watching Neighbors. We're all gonna say a phrase. It'll come out of each of our lips. John will say this phrase. Sam will say this phrase. Brett will say this phrase. T might even say the phrase. I don't know. he's a wild card.
But at the very least, the three of us will say it.
Yes, right? you will hear this phrase at least three times.
At least tea times, you say?
Three times.
Tea time? I'll take two lumps with mine.
But when you hear that phrase, you're going to want to write it down and put it in your Rambler notebook. And on our next Dan Aykroyd episode, we'll be watching either
My Girl 2.
My Girl 2. Or my stepmother is an alien. And we once again, another phrase will spew out of our mouth holes. And you will write down that phrase. That'll happen again for the third episode of this type of installment.
This type of loony, zany installment that
yes.
we do?
When you get all three phrases from the soon-to-be-classic Neighbors episode,
Exit to Eden episode and Dr. Detroit episode. You will
tear that page out of your Rambler notebook, rub it on your private parts or your parents' private parts if you're not of age. Then scan it and send it to Aykroyds@asbestfilms.com. That'll do it. But I just was saying that silly. You don't have to scan it.
Yeah. So write down the phrase, send it to us.
By whatever means.
Yeah, any means. I don't care if it's on Facebook or Ramblers Forum or Aykroyds at
asbestfilms.com.
And if you are the first one to get that phrase to any of us, you will win the prize. And
yeah,
boy, what a prize!
No, it is going to be a great prize, and actually,
surprise.
Instead of the Aykroyd Award, we really should just rename it the Try to Beat Drew Smith Award.
Yeah,
because more than likely he's going to be the one getting this phrase first. So,
good luck beating him. A fix, but for love of God,
no, there's not a fix. There's really not a fix. We're pleading to the listeners, beat Drew Smith in this game because he will get this phrase. If it takes months, he will get this phrase, and
it's pretty simple. It's just three phrases from three different episodes put together. So as long as you're not a dumbass, I think you can figure it out.
Yeah, and we all say it once during the episode.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to the podcast, even half listening, you'll hear this this phrase pop up three times and you'll know it.
Yeah, and all you gotta do is just listen to two other episodes, do the same thing. You're golden.
We got a prize, baby.
You pussy. Unless you're a pussy. Unless you're just like, I'm afraid
scared.
Of what life... Yeah. What sort of left turn could this make my life take?
Brett, you really laid it out there? Like, those are the rules that we dare not explain because we can't? Because we don't even understand them ourselves, even though we created the game?
Well, there's something really mystical about this game, you guys. Because, as you both know, I don't know why I'm even telling you this. I should be talking to the listeners right now. But, the phrase that we ended up with came to us in a sort of mystical way.
Mm-hmm.
The other night, I was down in the Dizzy Rambler's basement deciphering some Aykroyd lore by candlelight, and I was listening to...
We have our archives down in the basement down there.
And we have every Dan Aykroyd piece of memorabilia you could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to the gold record, Briefcase Full of Blues by the Blues Brothers. The number one selling blues record of all time. And the song Rubber Biscuit, I heard what I thought sounded like some back masking. It was during the part where he was like, We put it backwards, and that's how we got the phrase that you're going to put together for this contest. It's something mystical, it's something wondrous, it's a message from Dan Aykroyd to all of us that him and the dear departed brother John Belushi tried to pass to us.
Yeah, it's something only Dan Aykroyd would say and would feel comfortable saying, besides us.
That's true. I mean, we're...
But we don't even dare say it all together. We have to break it up into three parts.
Exactly. If we said those three parts of that phrase together the way...
Brett would be like the dude in Raiders of the Lost Ark. His eyes would be melting out.
My head would just explode.
Yeah, I think your pupils just like go totally dilated and your whole eye goes black. It's like really scary looking.
I was just gonna say something else we did in the first Aykroyd episode was I issued the very first Rambler challenge.
Ooh.
And for anyone who was interested when we did that, we will be following up to that. And Brett and Sam are gonna dish out their creepy UFO stories.
I'm hoping to cry while I tell you guys mine.
Yeah, we did cry. Me and Sam cried last time. Our goal was for all three of us to cry this one.
Yeah, it got really intense. And everyone seemed to get choked up.
So yeah, so we're gonna watch a silly Dan Aykroyd movie, then we're gonna talk about some very
silly,
serious Dan Aykroyd stuff.
This is a movie that will spur on some serious conversation though.
And sperm on your face.
I'm interested to watch Neighbors again because it's been a good couple, 2-3 years or whatever. How long has it been? A couple years, I guess.
It's been like a good 2-3 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Neighbors.
Like the only reason we had this movie.
No.
Oh really? I was wondering if this was named after. I'm sorry, John. I always wondered if this movie Neighbors was named after this song called Neighbors by the Rolling Stones.
But it's based on that book.
Well, it is, but the book could be named after the movie, after that song, too.
Is it about bad neighbors?
I don't know, just about neighbors, I guess.
Is the movie about bad neighbors?
Oh.
Oh, you better believe it.
That's what the cover looks like. It looks like they're attacking their new neighbor, John Belushi.
Yeah, that's what's interesting.
It's a comic nightmare.
Yeah, it's what's interesting
like
is John Belushi is more of the straight man in this one. Mm. And I am kind of looking forward to it. Again, the only reason we have this movie is because of my dad, really. Because he always was like, you should watch that movie. And it's out of print, you know. And me, you, and our old friend were at the thrift store. I saw it, and we were like, man, we got to pick a copy of that up. So we picked it up and watched it and did a rehearsal episode on it. And
you know, movie, good or bad, I'm glad that I found it, and it's a cherished possession of mine. So thank you, John Shaw, for changing our lives and for making Dan Aykroyd a richer man.
You mean John Shaw...
Junior.
Junior, which is not you.
Which is not me. I'm John Shaw something else altogether.
John anyway. Shaw, Prince Symbol.
Yeah. I'm just the artist formerly known as Shaw. Yeah, so this is a movie, and that's all I'll say about it.
No, yeah, it's certainly, I mean, we've given a hell of an introduction, but it's certainly one of my favorite Dan Aykroyd movies.
You haven't seen enough.
I've seen plenty. I feel like beyond Dr. Detroit, I don't need to see it anymore. Great movie. They originally were cast as the opposite roles, and they decided they wanted to switch, which I think is cool, because this is a great piece of acting by Dan Aykroyd. You don't usually get to see this kind of character from him. So that's my final first ramble.
That's your final first ramble for the intro?
That's my first final ramble.
I'm ready to take this Neighbors for a spin.
Let's take it for a spin.
I'll take it for a spin.
All right. Come on in. Everybody down the show. It's about to begin. Talking movie shorts and shows and much more with all of our friends.
The dizzy fucking ramblers, now it's time for the show to commence. Well, I feel like I'm coming out of a crazy world.
Ah, what an infuriating movie until the end.
A comic nightmare.
Until the end is an infuriating movie for me.
You know what? Until the end, it is really infuriating, but man, what an ending.
What an ending! I loved it.
I loved it.
Everything that I thought it was going to be, and then it threw some curveballs at me that I didn't remember, and I hated it throughout a lot of it, and then at parts of it I thought it was funny, and then it was such a powerful ending. I think every man wanted this movie, this ending, in their own life at some point. Like, can we tell how it ends? Can we...
Well, let's first say what the plot is.
We should break down the
movie. No, I like to tell people things before they even know what it means and can appreciate it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, though. I can't wait to talk about this ending, but...
One day after getting driven home from work by his wife, John Belushi notices that he has two new neighbors. Dan Aykroyd, looking like a neo-Nazi, kind of, playing this character named Vic with blonde hair and blue eyes. Like, did you guys notice that he had blue eye contacts the entire movie?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I did, and he wore them the whole movie.
Yeah.
No, that's an interesting tidbit right there. Like,
He picks up that Nazi book on the shelf.
Yeah, like, was that Mein Kampf or something?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, like, just some giant book with, like, a big swastika on the spine.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, and he flips through it for a second and, like, just puts it back, and it's just, like, that's just crazy that, like, that Belushi has it, and that like that he like was only interested in that one.
And he's talking to the German Shepherd in German, and like he's got that little, you know, warplane version of himself or whatever, and little World War II fighter plane.
Yeah,
like it's pretty weird. Like I think that's a crazy aspect. But anyway, that guy moves in and just continuously swindles and screws over him and his wife. Swindle and screw over John Belushi for like an hour and a half. As, like, it seems like he's sleeping with Belushi's wife, and...
I mean, there's a lot of crazy things. Like, it was a lot like another movie that no one can watch because it's not available, Get Crazy, that the Ramblers watched, that each time the movie thinks you're going to get as crazy as it's going to get, it just keeps on getting crazier. This movie was a lot like that. It was a little before Get Crazy, but it was the same type of feel at times.
Yeah, here's a big problem I had with it, is, like, it was really slow at first, and so, like, I couldn't see the timing on it, so I just felt like I was really far into the movie.
And it felt like it had five endings.
Yeah, and then there's like 5 points that, like, it's like, just end, it could end here, I guess. And then from there on, you're waiting for it, and you're, like, wondering how close to an hour and a half you are.
Yeah, let me clarify something. Like, even though overall it had a big impact on me because it was just such a crazy movie that it was enjoyable this time around, I don't think it was a well-put-together movie. I think, I don't know, I think a lot of it stems from, I read, like, both Belushi and Aykroyd became unhappy with Avildsen's directing in the movie, and both tried to get him fired. And so I think maybe, like, all of them wanted, like, different tones, and that affected, like, how the movie comes across. It was almost like it was supposed to be completely in a realistic world, but it was just, like, so outlandish and crazy that it was like it didn't work for me, really, especially the first half, where it just, like, it seemed so disjointed, and it was infuriating. John Belushi was just letting them shit on his lawn and just, like, do every terrible thing, give him his money, and, like,
fucking, I just, he didn't really shit on the lawn, but he basically did.
Yeah, and, like, it felt like this crazy world, and the only rule of this world was, like, to just, like, destroy John Belushi, and, like, just shit on this character, and, like, everyone seemed to be in on it, and it was just, like, and it, like you said, like, it had a weird tone, so it felt like another world anyway.
Like, it alluded to, like, his wife, like, fucking, the woman.
Dog. Yeah.
And the dog. And like, the dog. It's them, it's Kathy Moriarty, Dan Aykroyd's wife, and John Belushi's wife. In there, and you can just hear them laughing nonstop, and the dog barking in the bedroom.
Oh, you're right.
And he's like, "What's going on in there? Don't you know what this looks like?" or something like that. And yeah. You never find out what happens in that room or what happens to that dog.
Oh, yeah.
He definitely just like fed the dog like steak and stuff, too. But here's the thing.
No, but that's
part
of the reason I loved it.
Mm-hmm. I love this movie from top to bottom. I feel like, well, I do, because I think it starts out kind of slow, and you see, like, his boring-ass, terrible life. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think it's really awesome. Like, the first time I saw this movie and this time, both times when I realized I actually really loved it, that the first time was in the very beginning of it. It just has this ridiculous music to it, where it just, like, everything's, like...
It was annoying.
Oh, yeah, real wacky.
It was. It was. And then, after that goes on for, like, maybe 10 or 15 minutes, someone just turns off the TV, and then that's not on anymore.
Oh, I was so glad when that happened, too. That instantaneously made me fall in love with Ramona.
Kathy Moriarty's character.
Yeah, but continue.
No, but I just think that was, like, the first thing that I saw both times where I was just like, okay, yeah, this really isn't, you know, a normal type of movie. Like, I feel like it's a zany, surreal kind of comedy, and I feel like, I don't know, the reason why everything happens to John Belushi is because he's just, like, some sort of representation of, like, middle-class suburban men and how he just keeps on getting shit on by anybody. And, like, if that happened to, like, so many nice, you know, working class, or not working class, but middle class guys who work in, like, an office building every day, they would just allow that because of some sort of, you know, sense of having to be pleasant to the neighbors, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's just, like, a play on the, like, middle class guys who have their balls clipped.
I mean, that'd be cool. I think that is kind of true. No, I mean, I think overall that's true. I just wish... it just seemed unbalanced to me. It just seemed like it didn't... There were parts that were so good, and then parts where you're just like, I don't need to see John Belushi do everything, Brett. You said that at one point.
Yeah, no, really. Like,
so
like
many unnecessary... Like just nonstop shots of just like, okay, he's doing... The best thing in the movie, though, was the montage of John Belushi. Like, many, many times,
when he was getting ready to
Dan Aykroyd's wife, or whatever she was, is always coming on to him, and he always thinks he's having sex with her. It's a lot like the Lucy pulling the football away from Charlie Brown. Like, she keeps doing it, and
she does blow him.
Eventually she does, but like it is, she just disappears all the time. But he does get a little quick blowjob towards the end. Anyway,
well, he runs off and like puts lipstick on.
No,
like,
that's what I was gonna say. The best part is he's getting ready to have sex with her, and it's a montage of him in the bathroom for 2 minutes to Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah,
and it's
John G. Evelson was fired from that.
Yeah.
He was the director then, and he got fired.
He should have been getting ready to have sex with her, but he was getting ready to take her out to get
food. Yeah.
But he was putting baby powder on his chest. He was putting on a blue face mask.
That was pretty good. Like, the blue face mask was the best part of it. But that was when I was like, I realized it was a good montage, and I was like worried it was like, going to be a bad montage.
No, because at first it was just like him shaving again for the second time.
Yeah, he keeps shaving.
Honestly, I feel like there's nothing in that movie that, like, given enough time, like, it doesn't reveal itself as being like really clever or really funny. Like, I feel like all the stuff with him just being a pushover and stuff is just, I don't know, over the top. Zany surrealism.
Yeah, but his character just was so inconsistent because he was like, he loved him and then he hated him and then he hated him and then he loved him.
That's because he initially like hated him and then like for some reason he just started to fall in love with the fact that they were making his life crazy and then like they would still fuck with him and so he'd get mad initially but then he'd be like, well, I do love you guys because he's just like a loser. He'll like go along with these people.
Well, that makes me wonder about John G. Avildsen if he's a good director or not. Like, for those of you who don't know, he directed Rocky. He directed the original Rocky.
His first big movie was Joe with Peter Boyle. That it was kind of like a precursor to Taxi Driver.
Oh,
it's like this big cult movie and stuff, and kind of give a bunch of people their starts.
Joe, I suppose.
No, it started Peter Boyle.
Okay.
But then he got Rocky, and then
And then, of course, The Karate Kid. And then The Karate Kid 2 and The Karate Kid 3.
I really did all and The Karate Rocky Kid 5. Movies.
Yeah, and then the piece de resistance, Rocky 5, the worst sequel.
Some wacky thing had just happened with Dan Aykroyd. Now is like, is he an angel? Vic and Ramona were just crazy angels sent to heaven to spice up poor, boring John Belushi's life, whose family and...
So wait, was John Belushi dead in this analogy, or...?
Is he dead?
Mm-hmm.
No, he's alive.
okay, continue.
Yeah, yeah. But also I was like, or they could be aliens because like, there's...
I did think they were aliens because a UFO theme plays over Dan Aykroyd's name in the credits. Yeah. And then when he appears, John Belushi gets the trombone. Every time John Belushi walks around, it's like... Bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum. Yeah.
But Dan Aykroyd is like spooky UFO music. And so there were parts of the movie where I thought to myself, like, it would make sense if they're just like extraterrestrials who like live there.
And there's like a conspiracy that there's like extraterrestrials that look like Nordic people. Mm-hmm. Like, with like blonde hair and blue eyes.
Yeah, the blue eyes especially like, made me think that.
So like it does actually fit in with that, and like
maybe they were.
And do you think maybe that's Dan Aykroyd, like kind of like
definitely
charming up his like role a little bit?
No, definitely. Like, I think that was a Dan Aykroyd thing that he really had a fight with John G. Hamilton about, probably.
Where no, that's
he got
awesome.
His way. Well, I bet he did.
And if he didn't, it made it a better movie.
I mean, it makes me think that John G. Ellis is not a good director, or he just doesn't get some types of like humor or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I think it has its own sense of humor that is consistent throughout all of it. And I really, I stand by that. I believe that.
Yeah, I mean, Ape could have directed Rocky. Sylvester Stallone could direct a Rocky movie. Then John G. Ellison sure could.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
He also directed 1971's Cry Uncle, which is put out by Troma, because John G. Ellison was Lloyd's mentor.
Oh, sweet. Like, I actually never saw Cry Uncle, but the name struck a bell.
Mm. Before we ruin the ending for this movie, yep. I think we should talk about how John Belushi's daughter got home from school after dropping out, or getting kicked out.
Oh my god, that is like the most inappropriate scene. Like,
yeah,
this is the part you guys watched it with me. You mm-hmm. guys like saw, heard, just, like I screamed through this movie, did I not?
Yeah, because it was inappropriate and offensive, yeah. as Amanda Bynes would say.
Yeah.
That's my favorite scene in the movie.
Offensive.
That really is my favorite scene because they have that Dead Kennedy song playing.
Yeah,
in the
background. It was like such a hip scene for like definitely like a like on the cutting edge of whatever year they were in. What year was it?
81.
That made me ask as soon as that scene made me want to ask what year this was.
Yeah, 81. Which I mean, that's early for having a Dead Kennedy song. Certainly, that's when they're actually like. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, but no, like, I watched this scene looking like that painting, The Screamer, like, my hands were on my cheeks, I was just like, somebody explain what happened.
Yeah, so John Belushi comes out from wherever the hell he's been this time.
Yeah.
Locked somewhere or something.
Yeah, because they keep getting locked in the basement.
And his daughter has just come home from college, and she's dressed like a punk rock chick, and the Dead Kennedys are playing... And,
this movie all takes place over one night.
Well, yeah, over the course of 24 hours.
Well, Dan Aykroyd has a rad Rat Fink shirt that says Wild Child.
Yeah. Actually, it is a pretty crazy
gym
movie.
Shorts. Nasty vinyl gym shorts.
Mm. In a lot of ways, it is like Get Crazy. Taking place over 24 hours and kind of crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy, all right. It Go gets ahead. Crazy and it gets crazier when Dan Aykroyd pulls out her... candy panties. He pulls out John Belushi's daughter's candy panties and starts smelling them. He's like, smells like peach. And then she brings out a box and she's like, they come in four flavors.
Yeah, and like the whole family's laughing, except for like Belushi, who's just like, if anything, he's got like one eyebrow raising, and he's just like,
and he's got like, Belushi in this movie has like black glasses, and he's got some gray around the temples and stuff. Like, he really does look like a middle class dude, like a 40-year-old guy. And so then. Aykroyd's eating a pear in the background.
Crotch first!
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what's he say? Want to see what your daughter's panties taste like? Or something like that? Want to eat your daughter's panties? And just, like, bites for the crotch.
Mm.
So finally,
and then they're all she
just fucking nails him in the eye.
Yeah, because he's like, your daughter's panties come in four flavors.
Yeah.
Peach, blah, 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 and cherry.
Yep.
He's like, do you want to taste your daughter's panties? And then he punches him in the face.
Yep. And it's a really awkward looking punch scene.
But still, I'm glad
to say about the punch scenes in Rocky as well.
Yeah, nobody seemed to, like, understand why he punched the guy for
eating
the crotch out of his daughter's panties.
That's what infuriated me about the whole thing, is his daughter and his wife were so against him the whole time, and it was...
That's because he probably fucked his wife that afternoon.
Yeah, no, and he probably fucked his daughter while his wife was there, because, like, he fucked both of them.
He definitely fucked both of them, and then, like, the wife also fucked his wife, too, so it was, everyone fucked
everybody. It was a big joke that he wasn't getting fucked.
And when John Belushi gets back, his wife doesn't even mention the fact that she met Dan Aykroyd earlier in the day, and he came over earlier in the afternoon. Like, why would you not mention that unless they, you know,
they definitely did.
Yeah.
So he porked her before the movie even started.
And that's a neighbor's term, porked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brett, we were talking about doing a drinking game during this, and you could do it every time they say the word neighbors.
Or Bird Street.
You could say... No, that was something. They didn't reveal the name of the street until the very last scene, and they say it like five times. They're like, we're sure going to miss Bird Street. And you're like... Never heard of
Street
ever.
Babies. Like, yeah. Like,
we can talk about two things. Yeah. I'll let you decide, Brett. We can talk about the ending or the tagline. What you can only pick one. Listeners can only have one.
I'm getting a note from T here, and it says he wants to talk about the quicksand adventure.
Okay, all right.
The only thing I got to say about that is this movie does have everything. Like, right, not 2 feet away from, the house.
There's a swamp.
There's a swamp.
And so he's got a swamp on his property. He's got power lines above his house.
He doesn't mention that at all. There's a gigantic, conductor thing of, power lines that are, drawing in things, and things get,
killing crows.
The dog gets, pushed down to a gigantic ball by it, and it's crazy. Yeah. Everything, it's shocking everything.
Man,
and it catches his house on fire, and Dan Aykroyd's house burns down eventually.
You know
what? Keep going.
What this really makes me think is this movie must have been so much fun to work on, because it was just two locations. Mm-hmm.
Based on the stories I've heard.
It sounds like it should have been it should have been a romp, get together with these guys.
Pretty sure this movie
and
killed John Belushi.
Really?
I think so.
Killed his love for comedy and his.
I think he died a couple weeks later.
He overdosed 3 or 4 weeks after it was released, I think. So
get ready to laugh.
he was there's in the swamp when John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd both seemingly drown in the swamp, and then John Belushi comes back out and he thinks Dan Aykroyd's dead, and he's covered in mud and swamp water, and he looks like a mud man.
And he's lit from grief when he's staring in the window,
and he's walking and creeping around, and he's looking in on his wife, and they're in there flirting.
I swear the wife is doing this. I swear she's holding up her fingers.
Oh, what's she doing?
Doing
that?
A little penis sign. Yeah, I think that's what she's doing. She's doing a little penis sign with her fingers.
Wide load.
Yeah, this movie really—it was just a cartoon.
Dan Aykroyd reminded me of Jim Carrey circuit, in Living Color. Some of the characters he played on there was exactly how he played his character in this. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was an extraterrestrial. That's what I think.
Earth girls are easy. No, I think this movie's a lot. This movie reminds me of The Monkey's Head. It reminds me of Talking Heads, not Talking Heads, but David Byrne's True Stories. I feel like this is my last thing to say about this movie in terms of how I actually feel about it. I feel like it's definitely saying something about the times, and it's also just completely zany and crazy, and done in a super stylized way that's kind of weird.
Yeah, and I think it's a movie...
It's not everyone's cup of tea.
No, I agree. It's not everyone's cup of tea. It's a movie that you might have to see more than once to understand, appreciate. I hated it the first time, and I thought I hated it this time. It infuriated me for a good 45 minutes, and then things started happening. John Belushi put on a face mask, and it started going up from there. And I just... there were enough moments in the first half that I found funny to be like, maybe I can't give it a second chance. And then when the crazy ending happened, I blew a lot of things, and I blew my mind, especially because
I wish I knew what happened in that ending. I feel like I just passed out my entire memory of that experience. I have some missing time there. I don't remember any part of that ending. So
maybe you got beamed up.
Possibly. For my sake, please tell me what, both of you guys, tell me what happened.
Okay.
You know what? I'd rather have the first edition of a little game we've been talking about for a little while now. Where you guys recreate the ending between the two of you.
Oh, wow.
What's the name of that game?
We just call it the Reenact. Rambler Reenact.
Yeah, well, let's see what
we can go. Reenamblack.
Our listeners, can purchase their official Rambler notebooks online on the Asbest website and everything. And my official Rambler notebook, my rule book that I have for the podcast. I pulled up and I've got my segment list, and it says reenact. It's underlined.
Wait, can I pose it to you guys, considering I'm the one who's...
No, you are the one posing it. You are the one posing it.
So that's what I'm saying. This is exactly what a reenact is, per the definition of a reenact. One member challenges other two members to reenact scene of the movie they just watched. Ah! That's totally today.
So let's do it.
All right, so we're doing a reenact to TBD.
I'll come up with the title.
The reenact title can be edited in. So Brett, you're who?
Yeah, I'll be Dan Aykroyd.
Good, because I want to be John Belushi.
Okay, cool.
Are we allowed to a conference Chamber Master, Sam?
I don't know. I was hoping for more of a whose line is it anyway. I get to be, you know, that British bald asshole.
That just got started back on the CW.
Who's the host?
The new host is Aisha Tyler.
Oh, my God. No.
I know, isn't that terrible? But it does have all the other people on there.
The Dizzy Ramblers will return after these brief promotional messages.
This is what I want to talk about. The Wizard himself has hooked us up with a great new thing on the website called the Dizzy Ramblers Forum. If you click on the link to Dizzy Ramblers, you can scroll down to either episodes or forum. And if you click on forum, you, the listener, can send us your personal letter or response or comment or critique to us at Dizzy Ramblers or any of the Asbest team or crew. You can speak to Matt Reed. You can speak to Jess Fiano. You can speak to Charlie Metz, Brett Trail, Nathan Murphy, Sam Baer, John Shaw. Anyone I've left out, I'm very sorry.
Say about the Dizzy Ramblers forum and about the Dizzy Ramblers in general and about us in general. Our podcast.
Send in letters that are as sexy as possible. We really don't want anything that doesn't get us at least a little hard.
Oh, yeah.
So where is this Brett now?
Well.
Speaking of the devil and he shall appear. Hello, Brett.
Hello.
I come to understand you have a scene for me, boys. Yeah.
So this is an official reenact, right?
This is a Rambler reenact. The best title we could come up with.
So basically, to set up the scene.
Yes, please paint the portrait.
All right. Well,
Earl's daughter had just ran off with the Wrecker's son.
Now Earl is John Belushi.
Yes, yes,
yes.
And the Wrecker's son punched Earl, so she his daughter just ran off with the guy who beat him up earlier.
Uh-huh. His wife leaves.
Ednid, what's her name?
Cunt.
Yeah,
that's what she was.
No, she totally was a cunt. Okay, Cundy McCunnerson runs off with Chief Thundercloud.
Because she's gotten all into Native Americans. Yeah. That's actually a really funny... That's the only funny joke with her in the movie, is that for some reason she's become really interested in Native American culture because of, Ramona, yeah. I guess.
You know, his wife is out with another dude, and
after putting him through hell the entire movie.
Yeah, his daughter put him through hell, and she ran off with some dude who's putting him through hell, and she goes off to do her thing. Dan Aykroyd and Vic and Ramona had left too.
Yeah,
everyone's gone.
They took his car.
Yeah, and they took his car.
But because he gave it to them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. That's crazy. Yeah,
after they put him through hell the entire movie, John Belushi realizes that he, you know, has been deeply impacted by these people, and so he's like, "Wait, you can't leave. I have to give you something to make up for everything I put you through throughout the movie." And so he's like, "Here, take my car. It's all I can do." And Dan Aykroyd's like, no, we couldn't." He's like, "No, I insist. I want us to be friends or whatever." And then Dan Aykroyd's like, "Well, okay, I don't know how I could thank you." And he's like, "Don't even say anything."
This is part of the reactment. So Ramona said, "Oh, come here," and gives
a hug,
gives him a big hug,
but not sexual enough.
And Vic says, "Hey, come on, you're starting to make me look bad. Come on." So yeah,
apparently that happened. They take the car and leave.
Yeah. So
and he's at home, no car, nothing. Everyone left him. Everyone's fucking everybody else all by himself. And anyway, so that's the scene painted for you ever delicately as the Ramblers can. And so Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi's just sitting there. I'll be playing his part in this little reenactment. Brett will be Dan Aykroyd.
I'll be Vic and Ramona.
Oh, good.
Cool, we didn't discuss that, which is surprising. But anyway, so I'm just sitting, John Belushi's in his chair, and he's just a zombified state watching TV, watching just ad nauseum or something. And just in such a stupor, and just obviously miserably depressed, and just much like our own lives, he just has nothing, and he has no one, and he's just sitting in a chair, just staring at the TV. When it was a doorbell.
Bing bong.
That was part of it we reenacted outside. That was the part we got through.
Stop breaking the scene. You created the scene. You got us there. Okay, now.
All right. Doorbell rings. Yeah. John Belushi slowly comes out of his zombified state, realizes the doorbell has been ringing. So he gets up out of his chair and goes to the door and opens it to find
Ramona standing there.
Whoa, what a curveball for me. I thought it was Dan Aykroyd. Anyway, so he's like, what are you doing here? Hey, Ramona.
Well, we just couldn't leave you behind. And they embrace in a beautiful hug.
I don't remember any of this.
They do. And then the camera pans, mm-hmm. and you see Vic leaning against the car. Mm-hmm. And he says, it's true!
And so John Belushi comes out, and he's just like, I can't believe you guys came back. What's going on? Can I give you guys a hug? So he hugs both of them again.
Ah, come here.
Hugs galore going on.
And so, I love you, friend.
So I'm John Belushi, and I'm asking you, Dan Aykroyd, and wife Ramona, please come live with me. Stay in my home with me.
Oh, we're not staying here. You're coming with us.
What? No, I couldn't. I absolutely could not.
Why not?
You guys are the best thing that has ever happened to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, about 30 miles back, I just looked at Vic, and he looked at me, and we knew that we had to come back for you. We love you so much.
Well, I guess let's get going. I don't need to pack or anything, so let's just head on out.
Hey, don't you think you need to write Enid a note?
Yeah, you're right. I really should write her a note. In fact, I'll leave her a little more than a note. So John Belushi goes back inside, and he fucking, what's the first thing that he does?
He takes that portrait off the wall.
Oh, yeah, portrait. Okay, so he goes up to this portrait that is supposed to look like the three of them.
What's he doing with that portrait?
Yeah. Like, these three people that aren't people. They're more like stick people. And he picks it up and he just rams it down over his head. And you're like, whoa, what's happening? And so then, like, this is where the movie goes where I want it to. He fucking grabs the TV, picks it up over his head like the Incredible Hulk.
His back buckles a little bit.
And you think, like, whoa, he's gonna fucking destroy that TV. He throws the TV into the side of the house. The wall, it explodes. Flame go everywhere, catching the side of the wall, and so he just like he gives like a little smug smile to himself, and like he's like, ha ha, he's insane at this point. So he runs out, and then like the house is just burning up, and so he leaves. Well, okay, so I guess John Belushi tries to get in the car in the back seat.
Nope, you're sitting up here in the front next to the captain.
Captain Vic. And all right, buddy, I'll get in the front seat with you.
All right, let's go. Hey, I'm Ramona. I'm going to be sitting in the front seat, too. We're all going to be in the front seat. All right, let's go. Putting the keys in the car and driving off. Hey, what's that? Oh, it looks like you did leave a little bit more than a note.
Well, Edith always said, leave the light on when she gets home. And so then they drive off.
And scene.
So basically, if you could decipher from what we just said, what happens is John Belushi burns down his own home.
And runs off to
and runs
to
off
blue.
With Dan Aykroyd and wife. And makes has a great one-liner that I didn't exactly deliver perfectly, but it was close enough.
Well, I give you guys a D. Plus.
That's fair. Oh, okay.
Hey, if I was in high school, I'd be fine with that.
Now I know exactly what my English teacher must have felt like when she had to watch, like, six of those in a row for a period.
I know, right?
Like, presenting a project.
As stupid as that reenactment was.
And I loved it.
That was a crazy ending when John Belushi burns down his house, and it's just like his wife. It's so awesome because every man has wanted to do this, just to burn his house down, leave his wife and child behind, and just like
go off to fuck Dan Aykroyd.
Go off to fuck Dan Aykroyd and wife.
There was that weird sexy seduction scene with like when he was like after he shot at him,
Like, oh yeah, Dan Aykroyd chooses John Belushi.
Yeah, yeah, and then like he like he's like about to make him coffee, and he like he like he like undoes like some weird crotch thing that he has. Like right in front
and
of him.
And he's wearing like extreme short shorts, and like I think he's wearing fishnet stockings in that scene too.
Yeah,
he's
like,
for a while.
And he's dressed like a crazy alien. Mm-hmm. There's a, that one crazy scene, it looks like a crazy monster with a halo over its head.
Yeah, it's one wild ass Dan Aykroyd performance. Yeah, there's no Dan Aykroyd performance that's quite like that.
No, that's true.
And in terms of Dan, in terms of Aykroyd and Belushi, in terms of Aykroyd and Belushi, you guys. There's a lot of classic Aykroyd and Belushi collaborations.
I see where this is going.
In a lot of ways, I guess Aykroyd recreated that role in some ways in The Great Outdoors. Like that's kind of similar.
Yeah, that's true. That's kind of a shitty version of that. Well, anyway, but what, John? What's your favorite Aykroyd and Belushi collaboration?
I can answer real quick.
Lay it on me, Big Daddy.
It's that, it's the cover of Have Love Will Travel with the James Belushi.
You want my notes on that, Brett?
Oh, man.
I'm leaving you a note, Brett.
OT's gonna come out with a pail of water and splash it on your official Rambler's notebook.
I just burned my official Rambler's notebook. Mine's Blues Brothers, I guess, though.
Well, I'll tell you, my my favorite John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd collaboration ain't going to be 1941.
Mm-hmm.
Because that movie sucks.
That's
blows. Terrible. It's Spielberg's worst.
That is Spielberg's worst.
My favorite Belushi Aykroyd collaboration would just simply be them on SNL. Their time on Saturday Night Live together. Definitely. Classic. Boom. There it is. Yeah, Boom Goes the Dynamite.
My favorite collaboration between John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, I guess that'd be Blues Brothers. Brett, what's your favorite collaboration between John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd? What's your answer to that question?
I'm going to go with John's answer.
There's can I just say one thing?
Please.
There's one drop of Crystal Head vodka left in my Dan Aykroyd bottle.
Finish it. Consume
it. It's been in there for the last month or two.
All the
I just gotta suck on it a little. It's warming up, you guys. Yeah, there we go. That was good.
Alright.
Some movie posters for this film included a long preamble, which goes as follows. In a not-too-distant suburb on a very quiet street, Earl Keats, a man who leads a routine suburban life, sits calmly waiting for his dinner. Little does he know, this may be his last home-cooked meal. For somewhere in time and space exists a world, a comic nightmare world where anything can happen. A world that this reserved, hard-working homeowner is about to enter. In the next 24 hours, he will experience things that he has never experienced before and leave behind things he will never experience again. And somehow, his life will never be the same. For Earl Keese is about to meet the neighbors.
Wow, that's the movie to a T.
Yeah.
I insist.
Did you say I exist?
I think that was T. Ryder Smith's Asian butler, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't. I can only do Clint Howard. I can only copycat that one. I'm only your own study on that one.
I exist.
No, I said I insist. I insist. Like I.
I exist.
Guys, we're in a weird place. This is Dan Aykroyd.
We're entering the nightmare comedy world.
We're entering a realm that I think only one person is really capable of explaining.
Rod Serling?
Well, no, I was going to say Dan Aykroyd, but I really should say two people. Because if there's anyone who's been studying about Dan Aykroyd's life philosophy, like, all day and all night, Sam, you've been searching the pages and the documents of the Aykroydian scrolls.
That's
searching for answers, searching for enlightenment in this dark and dreary existence that we call life. So please, break down the secrets that Dan Aykroyd foretold.
No, I mean, it's pretty scary, like, in terms of where this has led me. There's a video online that Well, Danny Aykroyd doesn't explicitly endorse it or appear anywhere in there. I feel like he, I could sense his spirit when I watched it. And as far as I know, Brett, once he saw the video in question, he started speaking in tongues and deciphering an entire secret language from this video.
Sounds like a...
Yeah.
It was foretold in the Scrolls of Aykroyd that this year would be the start of the new millennium. Year zero. The year we all ascend into Aykroyd heaven. A.K.A.
Ascension. Millennium. Ascension.
We've been programmed.
Millennium. Ascension. Millennium.
Be the best that you can be.
Best of your ability.
Sounds like a Barney song. One hell of a Barney song. Brett, tell me what the fuck this is. It's a song that is stuck in my head. What the hell is it?
Yeah, it's the new Corey Feldman jam.
What?
A new Corey Feldman single? When did this drop?
When did this drop is what I was about to say. When did this drop?
Was it sometime mid-June, I guess, maybe. Sound right?
That sounds right to me.
He gave exclusive rights to his friends at MTV.
And they just lambasted him and made fun of him on the website.
Only available on MTV for the longest time.
And they made it impossible to find on there.
Because no one cared and no one wanted you to watch it. Because
it was spelt like the version of Millennium with two N's in it, which I guess like one of them is like maybe the European version and one's the American version. And if you misspelled it, like, or if you spelled it the way that's more traditional to us, you couldn't find it. So if you just like search for Ascension Millennium, like, and spelt it with one N, you couldn't find it.
I don't think you could find it if you searched for Corey Feldman, do you? Because I feel like I did that and I couldn't find it.
They made it like really hard to find. Yeah, like, and then they just like.
Because that's part of the conspiracy. They don't want you watching that. They don't want you knowing the truth.
You know why? Because, like, because Corey Feldman's telling the truth, and, like, MTV's just gonna laugh at him.
I mean, yeah, it's owned by Viacom. It's a gigantic, like,
corporation. Yeah.
Like, it's what Dan Aykroyd and Corey Feldman are all warning us about, and Feldman, I think, is being pretty subversive by premiering his video on
there. And it's finally on YouTube. Finally, YouTube has the balls to put it up. And I recommend immediately stop what you're listening to right now. Pause us. Go to YouTube and type in Corey Feldman Ascension Millennium and watch that 4.5 minute music video. Your life will be changed. If you want to understand what the Ramblers are rapping out to you, if you want to be able to possibly wrap your tiny little brain around what we're rapping, then you...
This is the rap you need to rap.
Yeah.
If the I think the audience needs to wrap this around their tiny little penises like a condom. This video is going to keep them safe in the new millennium.
Pause this podcast. Go immediately to YouTube. Type in Corey Feldman.
You're dailymotion.net.
Yeah. Corey Feldman.
Go to Dogpile. Do a dig.
Corey Feldman Ascension Millennium.
Ask Jeeves. ask him what the stupidest music video of the last 5 years is, and you'll find it.
But I promise you, watch this and your life will be changed. I promise you. And it changed our lives. Like,
go on your Napster account and steal a little something from
You'll see.
He's loaded. You'll see his mansion in this fucking video.
Okay, guys, let's infomercial this.
Whether you like Kazaa or Morpheus, download it.
No, I think the only way that the listeners can really appreciate what we're saying is we gotta infomercial this bitch. Like, the things you're gonna get with this, some would call it a music video, some would call it a conspiracy video, some would call it a video so out of this world that it doesn't even have a name.
You could say it's like one of those like TV televangelists.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he looks like one. He looks like...
There's angels!
And one of them's name is Corey Feldman. There's this part where Corey Feldman has these big tits.
Oh man, there's some big tits in this video.
Yeah, the biggest boob of them all.
It's Corey Feldman.
He's trying to get his glove on for the first 20 seconds.
Here's some plastic things you get in this crazy video. Corey Feldman tries to get both of his gloves on. He can't. He can't get them both on. One of them is dangling off his hand for the entire music video. Why is that? Because it's one long, unending shot for 4.5 minutes. Balls to the wall. Corey Feldman, two chicks dressed as angels. Corey Feldman in the shower, fooling with his hair. He's got ropes attached to hats coming down from the sky. They pull him down. Some black dude can't get his rope unattached from the hat, so he dances with the rope on his head.
I don't think it matters that he's black.
It doesn't, but you know what does matter is how fat the chef is in the kitchen. Fucking cooking up the pizza pies.
Sid Haig.
He looks like Sid Haig, yeah.
Cooking him up a flapjack.
What kind of gift could that chef give Corey Feldman? He's stone
stone cold face the entire shoot. He's miserable. He hates being there. This is the 22nd time they've done this, and every other time something's been fucked up. This is the best take they get. But he gets happy in this one part. The chef, you know what he does, Brett? He gives him the one gem. The beautiful jewel that Corey Feldman needed to bring out those emotions in his, like, human frail state that only him and Dan Aykroyd can conceive.
He gives him a hot cake!
A hot pancake! A steamy pancake. Smells delicious. You know it smells delicious. How do you know that, Sam? Because he sticks his little tiny Feldman night nose in there.
Oh, he's got a big nose.
He sticks his huge Jewish nose in there.
That's the kind.
Inhales, and he the biggest smile in the world. The only time his lips crack a seal the entire movie. Just the biggest grin in the world. And you see little Tommy. You see, like, young Corey Feldman from The Goonies. You see awe.
No, he does look like the young, like, Feldman.
He does.
Like,
he reverts at age 28 years or something.
I think longer than that.
Corey Feldman's 31, right?
Corey Feldman's got to be like 40, 50. Right?
Yeah, he's probably getting close to 40.
Let's see, if he's like Freddy the Third 4 is like
84.
84, and he's like 12 there.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone else pick up from there,
he'd be like 44.
Was he really 12 then?
I definitely
close think
he's 12
enough.
That right?
He's close
Friday
enough.
Part 4, he'd have to be 12.
So he's in his early 40s.
Yeah, I'd say so. Because he has to be, like, Goonies is what, the next year? He's got to be at least, like, 14 for that, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, like, Corey Feldman will, like, listen to this podcast, they'll hear his age, and be like, no! And, like, just, like his hair will go all, like, long and gray.
So, he's there with all of his angels, and they'll just, like, look at him and be like, ew, you're 44, and they walk away.
Wait, babe, it's cool, I'm a Goonie.
I've got a big tattoo on my arm. Yeah, Corey Feldman's shirtless for a portion of this video, and you can see that he has a gigantic hot air balloon and a humongous sky on one of his arms. Like, it looks like, and it looks exactly like a mural in my mural.
Mural.
It looks exactly like a mural in my middle school lunchroom. Like, there's literally the exact same thing with this silly blue sky with nice puffy clouds, and then a hot air balloon floating through. It's crazy. Corey Feldman, we see more of him than I ever wanted to.
No, it's yeah, I mean,
but he still holds back that Corey Feld package, you know?
Yeah, it's the most perfect thing you could ever imagine seeing. We've watched it so many times. Brett, you actually translated the lyrics, like, from the old scrolls themselves. You spent hours,
you heard voices whispering in your ears.
For a night and a half, I just, like sat, like, at my desk with a pen and paper, and, like, I just, like, heard these voices, like, over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, and they didn't stop until, like, I, like, got them all, like, written down. I just knew if I wrote them all down, they would stop.
No, it reminds me of our Smallville fans will appreciate this, when one of the characters becomes possessed with the ability to, like, write Kryptonian symbols, and so he can't control and just sits there and, like, writes Kryptonian symbols. That was a lot what it was like for you. Your eyes glazed over, and you just were just like,
I don't even
constant
remember,
movement.
I don't even know if I was looking at the paper. Like, I don't know. I felt like I could have even had my eyes closed.
It reminds me of this time when I sold Brett's soul to Satan to get him to transcribe all these weird lyrics by Corey Feldman. But that's beside the point.
Yeah, like, I don't even remember, like, all the lyrics, but, like, or all the words that were, like,
important to you.
But he's spewing, yeah, like, he's spewing lyrics like an AK-47.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's so many.
I heard these voices coming at me, like, so fast, and, like, it was things like, wake up to the dawn of everything you can become. There's, something about, like, chances, yet it's gonna kill you in the end.
Sounds like a Slayer song, right?
Sounds like the part of the show where we all tear up.
Yeah, no, like, the claims that there's no hell.
It's because he's going to create a new hell on Earth once the Aykroyd Christ is able to mature.
Have we even mentioned the fact that Corey Feldman's dressed like Michael Jackson during this?
No, it sounds like a Michael Jackson song from 1992.
Yeah.
It sounds exactly
like he
meets Michael Jackson wearing a Jackson 5 costume outside dancing.
Yeah.
I do love that about it. I feel like he's just going for it. He's like, you know what? I'm Corey Feldman, and I'm back. He's back from 1995. He's like, you know what? 1995. I want it back. I'm gonna do it. Who's coming with me?
It was a good time for me.
I like to party. Come party with me.
And like, I'll pay you. And he paid him a couple this
time. Yeah, and he gets like people like, you know, like the assholes at Neon Energy Drink to like pay for it. And, yeah. Like, and they're just like,
I think into rent a house too, because like I've said before, I think in no way is that.
I think that's his house, man. No, I think that's Corey Feldman's house. Yes, the whole music video takes place at Corey Feldman's mansion.
That's the Feld mansion.
That's the Feld mansion.
He owns that shit. He's got that shit down.
Neon Energy Drink is paying for the rental of this house occasionally to do events there. No way is that.
I'd like to believe, if there is an Aykroyd Christ, Sam, I'd like to believe that on him that's Corey Feldman's Feld mansion.
I mean, he did get Sean Astin to be in it.
That was the best part. I'm not a fan of the Goonies at all, but that was just cool. Like,
buying ecstasy off Corey Feldman.
Probably.
Corey Feldman threw him some like angel dust.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he gave him the money and the scroll, and then he tossing the
Yeah, that was such a beautiful moment.
That's the only truly
magical moment in that thing, honestly, is the fact that Sean Astin for some reason went there.
You know what I thought when I saw him? I was like, who's this cocksucker?
I mean, it's not like it's Josh Brolin, but...
The one thing that does suck about the event, I'll call it, is that the main chorus of the song starts up when Corey Feldman's not even on camera. And it's like a good 15 seconds. It's like on the girl or something, and then it's on the wall. And it's just, like I said, it's one long panning shot.
Yeah,
like,
there's a lot of wall.
There's a lot of wall. Let me hear it for the time when he can't get the glove on.
That's from Sam.
I mean, Brett, what is it you're wanting to say? Shout out to something.
Like my least favorite, my favorite part, like are within the same strut. it's a strut around the pool. It's a strut around his like his Feldman pool. Uh-huh. When he first gets there, he encounters this like really awkward little kid. It's like this
who may or may not be young Michael Jackson.
Yeah, it's like maybe supposed to be like a young Michael Jackson. So it's just like a very awkward shaped like young black child
with a small afro.
It looks like their hair's even shaved up a little bit, like so it's like a particular.
And he's in front of a neon energy drink sign.
Yeah, with like a sequin vest and like big cut out stars on it.
It's just like really goofy looking clothes.
And the camera awkwardly goes super close at first and has to come back out, and like you see like the shade of the camera on him, and it just it looks terrible. And it's all in front of a big sign.
He kind of looks like Beetlejuice.
Imagine how awesome that'd be if they got Beetlejuice.
Yeah, no, it should have been. If that would have been Beat, that would have been cool.
So surely when he walks around, nothing goes awry, right, bro?
Yeah, everything from there gets really weird, because like then you're just like passing in front of like all these like neon energy drink booths that looks like you're at a festival, and like
people. And there's all these extras there, but the camera's getting flared out, so you can't see anything.
So many hot girls in bikinis, but you can't see them at all.
Everyone just kind of holds up their drink, like, yeah, like, cheers, camera, like, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah.
And then he finally gets by all these, like, booths at, like, the festival, and then this guy, like, dives off and, like, flips off of, like, the jumping board, and then the camera is like, oh wow, what was that? and pans over to see like where the guy jumped.
I mean, it was obviously supposed to be timed out to where it went over and you saw him jumping or diving rather. But the guy was either 2 seconds too early or the cameraman was 2 seconds too late, because he pans over just in time to see ripples.
Yeah, exactly.
Feldman's off the screen for like 2 or 3 seconds there as the camera's just on nothing.
Yeah, so the camera's on nothing, and then it gets back to what is my favorite part. Which is like, I guess he maybe even realized that the guy didn't get the dive, so he looks really mad. So like, he's strutting back into his house now, and he just like, he looks like so pissed off. It's like he just got like the most intense anger on his face, and you can see neon energy in the background. So like I hate that like they got in my favorite shot. But,
here's what I wonder. It seems like he really speeds up his pace right there when he's angry. Like, he runs. And I wonder if everything is so confusing. He started walking in a normal pace, and then once he gets angry, he just kind of, like, runs inside, basically. And he even looks behind him to make sure the cameraman's still back there, I feel like, at one point.
Yeah.
So I wonder if everything is so weird when he gets inside just because they were like 30 seconds, like 10 or 15 seconds off, and they didn't know what the hell is happening there, and they have to like spend more time in that room.
I mean,
I mean, I'd have to believe there are times when he's either ahead of or behind the pacing they thought he would be.
I mean, I think the pacing is all wrong throughout the entire thing. I don't think any of them had any idea what they were doing.
Because that actually is the next part is my favorite part, when he's in that room full of people and there's a bunch of hats hanging with big white ropes, and they're all like Michael Jackson hats, and then for no reason at all, the hats drop, and he grabs his hat and puts it on, and for everyone else, like 10 seconds later, all their hats drop. And then this one guy's just wearing the rope on his hat the entire time. Is they're like not choreographed.
They're not synced up and dancing at all.
They're all doing like an awful Michael Jackson impersonation. Like, it's so weird. Like, it's so strange with the stuff that he said about Michael Jackson. The fact that he'd be doing all that Michael Jackson stuff in a video that sounds exactly like Michael Jackson.
But it has a happy ending. He goes and gets back in bed with the girl after having a hard day of partying.
Not before he plays in front of millions of adoring fans, though.
Yeah, his dream event, the Hog's Breath Cafe.
Philbin walks into a room with his shitty band full of like
losers. Losers.
A bunch of loser heads, as I just said. Are all sitting there strumming on their guitars and like trying not to look at the camera and then awkwardly looking at it sometimes, and then like the walls fall down and like they're in this weird CGI like arena where they're playing in the middle of the crowd, it looks like. And then he celebrates his job well done with, like, I don't know, what a Roman gladiator would do. And he leaves and goes back in a sexy bedtime.
So basically watch this video. Yeah. It'll change your life.
The great thing about the big crowd is the fact that it's, like, obviously, like, stock footage from, like, some other concert or event. And, like, there's this little stage that you can see, and, like, for just long enough to read it, you can see it says Hog's Breath Cafe.
Yeah, from where they are...
What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, so many things just don't make any sense that are, like, well, maybe that's there for, like, on purpose, but who knows. But, yeah, like, for that, it looks like they're in, like, the private, you know, booth or whatever, overlooking the stage. Like, it's really weird that you can see the stage from where they are. Like, why would they have... Why would he have a...
Here's what happened. Like, someone was like, hey, Corey Feldman, I'm going to, like, this, like, super big, like, concert festival. Like, do you want me to, like, you know, score you a t-shirt or something from there? He's like, no, man, what you gotta do is you gotta take this camera and you gotta get a shot of the whole crowd. And, whatever the event was happened to, like, be sponsored by the Hog's Breath Cafe. And, like,
he got it back, he's like, God damn it! Nothing's working on this fucking video! Seriously, bro! You're fucking me!
I mean, I'll say this. I'm glad that Corey Feldman still is doing what he's doing. I'm glad that he has an audience.
God, we...
Us?
Yeah. No, just listening to his album the other day was incredible. I recommend everyone get on whatever sort of music service you use, or go to a good old-fashioned record store and pick up...
I don't think you can at a record store.
Yeah, you can probably still buy it on his website. If even.
You should go to a record store and buy a real record.
Yeah, go to a record store, buy the Magical Mystery Tour. That's a good album, Brett. I'm gonna put my hat in the ring for that one.
Go pick up the newest from The Knife or Ghost.
Ooh. John, what CD are you gonna endorse right now?
I guess Lady Gaga's Art Pop out in November. You should go buy that one when it drops.
What's it gonna be called?
Art Pop.
It's gonna be a full new studio album.
Yep.
I'm excited.
Me too. It makes two of us.
Hey, do you guys think that Dan Aykroyd executive produced Ascension Millennium by Corey Feldman?
Oh, no. I think Dan Aykroyd is way too cool to have anything scuzzy like that going on. I think the skeletons in his closet are just nothing more than just,
his web feet.
Fake alien skeletons.
Yeah, a couple hard drugs that, like, he doesn't talk about a lot and... Things like that. Like, he probably doesn't have, like, nasty, like, pedophile, like, shit. Like,
he murdered John Belushi.
You ever seen My Girl with Jamie Lee Curtis? Was that movie?
No one's ever
seen it. Was Dan Aykroyd in one of the My Girls?
He's in both of them, bitch.
He's My Girl.
he's the Macaulay... Don't tell me he was Macaulay Culkin in that movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have the same haircut at that point.
I've never seen
everyone had that haircut. It was the 90s.
Jamie Lee Curtis had that haircut. Yeah.
Everyone had that haircut.
Yeah. Everyone does have the same haircut in My Girl, I guess. I've never watched either of those, but I will one day. Ascension Millennium really comes from a world that most people know of not. Dan Aykroyd knows of this world. So we'll say it's an invisible world.
A nightmare comedy world?
I think Dan Aykroyd has called it both those things.
I guess what I'm saying is, if this video was going to come from such a strange place and strange time as Corey Feldman's imagination, because this had to be all him, every part of it, down to the neon energy drink.
But yeah, except for that, I think. I think they had some of
that. That was his funding. It sucks that they made him like put that much of it in there, and he couldn't have just been like taking a sip out of like a fucking neon energy can.
Yeah, they're like, there's no way you're not getting this. Okay, we're here. We're the party. Everyone's gonna get drunk on energy drinks. It's a fun time.
Do you think they have alcohol in there?
No, I don't think so. I think that's just a regular energy drink that little Michael Jackson drink.
That guy diving off of the pool should have been on a BMX then. It should have been more like Red Bull. Like, Sean White should have, like, drove a Mini through there and, like, killed a bunch of people.
All they could afford was a bunch of whores. Bunch of high-class whores. You know, and a bunch of guys who took 1 week of dance lessons.
You know, this music video.
All homosexual.
What do you mean you stand-ins can't dance?
This music video.
Just do what I'm doing, okay? Pull down the hat and then dance like this. And like, you saw the Thriller video.
This video could have been perfect, like you say, if it had only been Dan Aykroyd on set, in charge, in control. It would have been a better run production show because he could have taken his Blues Brothers knowledge. He would have treated it like his vodka. He would have triple filtered it from the invisible world of his imagination, and he would have crafted it perfectly. And his Corey Feldman and Dan Aykroyd combination would have been unstoppable, and that would have been probably nominated for a Webby.
That's true. I mean,
I do like these things, like these like one long video take things. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some fun ones.
Alfred Hitchcock's Rope. Yes. That classic YouTube sensation. Jimmy Stewart like auto tuned. You two are a couple of homosexuals. You see, and I had sex with you when you were in college. That's what the plot of that movie is, you know.
Oh, really?
Guys, I want to. Okay, we've started off lightly with Corey Feldman, had some fun, but I want to get
it. Put the tip of the head in.
Yeah, I want to get darker and more disturbing. I want to get creepy. Hold on, I'm gonna go turn off some of the studio lights over here.
All right. I'm gonna set the mood romantically and in a dark seance type way by
lighting
this heart shaped candle because it's the only candle I have.
Aww, it's so cute.
Cute and frightening.
So it's completely dark in the studio now, adorable. Except for this candle, and there's a computer on the background, but that's alright, because we need it.
Yes.
You need it. You, the audience, need it to be on, because it's recording us, so listen in as Sam weaves a tale.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Oh, big day.
We're baby stepping this, getting darker as we go, so let's move on to something, a follow-up to the first Aykroyd episode we did. I issued the first ever Rambler challenge for you guys to bring me a spooky, spooky, supposedly realistic, maybe not, who knows, alien or conspiracy or some creepy video that was going to make me wet my jockeys, as Jack Nicholson says in Anger Management. So Sam and or Brett, I want both of you to titillate me.
I have an account that befell a married couple in 1961. Sometimes it's called the Hill Abduction. Sometimes it's called the Zeta Reticuli Incident.
I'm already creeped out.
I can't handle this.
Betty and Barney Hill, a couple who, they're in their early 40s. They just vacationed up in southern Canada.
Why couldn't their last name be Rubble?
Oh, that would have been really funny.
Continue.
Anyway, they were driving through rural New Hampshire, through the White Mountains. A place I've been through before, right where the old man in the mountain used to be. So they're driving right through there, which is kind of like, at that time of night, the middle of nowhere. It's a 4-hour trip.
A 4-hour trip.
7 hours later, they get home, and they know something had happened to them.
I feel like Robert Stack should be telling the story.
I made a 3-hour drive so many times. Like, you know, you're gonna like land back in your house right smack dab on that mm-hmm. It's like clockwork.
It was a drive they'd done before. A drive that, yeah, exactly. They knew how long it would take, and it took them 7 hours. And something very disturbing happened that they could remember, and something very disturbing happened that they couldn't remember. The first thing was, as they were driving down that sort of completely desolate road at late at night, there was a orb of light following them above them. And, you know, they figured it was just like a plane or something like that. But Betty kept on looking at it, and she was like, no, this thing is actually moving around, and it's like zigzagging back and forth and stuff. It's not just, you know, it's not like it's a planet or anything like that. And so Barney looks out, and he sees that there's something wrong. And so he says, all right, well, let's pull over and take a look at it. And he pulls over and takes the dog for a walk, and he's looking at it with his through his binoculars. And he can see that there's, like, it's not a plane. It's not some sort of shooting star or anything. It's some sort of, saucer-shaped object with a bunch of different lights on every single side all lighting up. At that time, he gets back in his car, and they just start driving really fast to get out of there. And they know something's up. Then the light starts pretty much playing a game with them and following them everywhere and sort of coming, like, up to about 100 feet above them and stuff and just sort of dancing around. And it goes over, like, a closed-down restaurant. And then, actually, they're going past the Old Man of the Mountain, and it goes up and just sort of swirls around that for a little bit and then comes back down. Barney has to slam on the brakes because the orb stops directly in front of them in the road. And he gets out of the car, and he hears their voices in his head saying, don't worry, just come towards us or whatever. And he starts walking up, and he can see all these faces looking at him through the window of these humanoid beings. And they all start going towards, like, a door that opens, and he freaks out and gets in the car, and they, like, floor it in reverse and drive away. And she's looking up, and she can't see anything. But then she realizes it's not that she can't see anything. It's, like, she can't even see the stars. It's completely black above them. At that point, the car stalls, and that's the last thing they remember. And then they sort of come out of it, like, 35 miles later, and they're just like, what the fuck happened back there? And they really have a fuzzy memory of getting to where they are, and then they drive home, and they realize they're 3 hours later than they should have been. That's where I start to get teared up, Brett.
Oh man, you got a tear for me. You got a tear for me. Wow. Woo. I don't know how you, man. You're a great storyteller. Because I don't always buy in every alien story, but I got so into that one that my eyes bled a little bit.
Well, there's one last piece to the puzzle. Because getting home, they knew there was something wrong. So a few days passed, and the two of them mentioned briefly to each other what they thought might have happened. The last thing they could remember was seeing an orb in the middle of the road, and then it flew away. They felt completely conflicted about it, and they talked
Were they, driving?
Yeah. It was, almost as if, their memory had, or, they'd been given something that started wearing off once they actually started driving again.
Yeah.
Basically, they knew something happened, and so they started, talking to different people in the community about if they knew anything about scientists or anything that actually did studies on this. After about 10 days, Betty started having these nightmares that lasted 5 nights in a row, where she dreamed exactly what she thought might have happened. Where their car was surrounded by all of these humanoid men who had these, sort of wraparound eyes, and they were gray and had, no noses at all. And they took them out of the car and then brought them up onto their spaceship and flew somewhere she doesn't know. And they showed her a map, a star map, of where they were right then. And then they took her and examined her and took some of her hair and strapped her to a table and did a whole bunch of other stuff to her. And she just had all these horrible nightmares.
What kind of stuff?
Scraping off some skin cells, and I think they stripped her naked and just took,
photographs?
Took the drew cocks on her. Put, insert dick here and pointed at her butt.
Kind of cheese up her butt.
I've heard, didn't, like one of them have dentures or something like that, and they found like that was like a novel, like they were surprised by that.
I haven't heard that.
Like yeah, like the what, Barney.
Barney.
Yeah, apparently Barney had dentures, and like they were like fascinated by him.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the most famous stories of alien abduction, John, because it's one of the most believed. Because after she had all these nightmares, and after they realized something was wrong, they still never went for any sort of publicity. She had 5 nights of nightmares and never dreamed about them again.
Right.
Yikes.
Also, after the supposed abduction, the watches they had on never worked again. They
were, boom, electromagnetism.
The car had 2 circular indents on it that were never there before. And
boom.
When they put a compass next to it, that started whirring around crazily.
Did these people ever get cancer?
Well, I forget how Barney died, but he died in 1969. But her dress was completely torn up. The strap to the binoculars was broken. Neither of them remember how any of those things happened. There was a bunch of weird pink powder on her dress as well that blew away when she...
Well, that could have been from anywhere.
But, so there's a lot of strange physical evidence, or at least, I mean, you know, physical evidence, at least for them. Because these are people who never sought out publicity or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So then, word got out amongst some people they knew, and they started talking to a bunch of different astronomers, doctors and stuff. And,
talk to astrologists and astronomers.
They talked to some podiatrists about their bunions. And they wound up with this psychiatrist in Boston. So they go to this doctor, Dr. Simon, I believe. They go to Dr. Benjamin Simon, who hypnotizes them and takes them back into their subconscious so they can remember the things that were blocked out by whatever sort of...
I don't think I can handle this. I'm too innocent.
...they were given. It's very disturbing, John. So
I opened up a door I should have opened.
In Barney's session, and Dr. Simon was also, he was a non-believer. He didn't believe in aliens. He didn't believe in what they were saying.
Why would you?
Exactly. He said that he saw real anxiety, that these people were not making up. They at least thought, they completely believed that this happened to them. Because Barney was emotional and fearful, and he was showing signs of anxiety all the time and fear in his real life. Then he was just constantly sort of stressed out and unable to handle what happened to him. He said basically his eye... Once they brought him under, the doctor made it so he couldn't remember these things again until he was able to actually deal with them because they were so horrible for him. Basically, during the abduction, he had his eyes closed almost the entire time because it was just so frightening. And when he had his eyes open, he just remembered this gigantic, like, eyeball over him just, like, staring down into him and, like he said, pressing into his own brain, basically. And the aliens were all standing around him as he was on a table, and they were all speaking to him without moving their mouths, just, you know, talking inside of his brain in kind of like a broken English, talking to him like that. The creatures stalled at his car and surrounded it and then forced him to get out or whatever before that. But they collected parts of his skin, they put a cone around his dick and extracted a bunch of sperm out. They anally probed him. And they went and, you know, counted all of his vertebrae and everything.
So wait, was this hurting or did he feel any of this?
No, he felt, supposedly the pain that they felt, they would feel it, but the aliens, once they sensed that they were feeling pain, could, like, take it away.
So it, like, hurt a person and stopped?
Or? Yeah.
It sucks still. Like, but it's cool that they did that, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, they could just, like, let you suffer.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking sperm getting pulled out of your dick. Cone or no, that sounds like a no picnic. Yo,
he said
he doesn't want anything to do with that.
He said he didn't remember orgasming. It was just like that somehow getting it extracted or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Once Barney went through weeks of hypnotism or whatever and talking about it, he was able to finally deal with it and able to get on with his own life. Betty and hers, the doctor took her under and she was talking about how she basically remembered the same thing. And, like, her description was different.
Did they just play with their tits the whole time?
Yeah. There's, like, squirting chocolate milk out of her boobs. But, no, like, her description and his description, independently of each other, were extremely similar. And her description was, like, pretty much the same as what she dreamt, but just, like, different. The details were kind of different. But everything that she said happened pretty much. And, at one point, the aliens took a gigantic, like, needle and stuck it in through her belly button. And that was another time when she was in, like, agonizing pain.
And she liked it.
And they took it away. Oh. But in that dream, once she was hypnotized there, she talked about the star map. And the doctor had her under hypnotism draw the map that the aliens showed her of the stars.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And so then, you know, basically the two of them get over it and they're feeling better, I guess. But some newspapers and stuff have heard about it and it becomes news.
And how could they have heard about it? Did the psychiatrist, like, bleed out the news?
Because this is over the course of, like, 2 years, maybe. And they went to a bunch of different people asking them for help about this. And they never.
But all the people they should have been talking to should have been sworn to privacy.
But, well, because they're also talking to, like, scientists and stuff like that, and people who were in, like,
okay, that's fair.
UFO societies or whatever, because they were just, like, the only people that they could find who had any sort of, like, who could point them in the right direction, I guess.
That's fair.
So it becomes a news story, and these two get put into, like, the national spotlight, and, like, a year later, a book is written, and that includes a printed version of the star map.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, like, amateur scientist lady ends up studying the star map for, like, several years.
She dedicates several years of her life to this map and this book.
I mean, yeah, just like, I guess the story grabbed her. And I mean, she was just doing it, I don't know if she, I mean, it's not like she was working at it constantly.
She was a nutball.
She's an asshole. But no, and then she discovered that the pattern of stars and everything that she drew and all the details were descriptive of Zeta Reticuli. It looked like the star system Zeta Reticuli, pretty much the vantage point would be from Zeta Reticuli, as if the flying saucer went there. That's why it's called the Zeta Reticuli.
Where's that? Like, some sort of context?
I have no fucking clue. Like, somewhere up in, like,
Dan Aykroyd
or, like,
would
galaxy
know.
Or whatever. It's like a completely different star system, so it's like, you know, completely. I wish I knew how far away it was. But it's very far away. It's far, far away. Trust me on that. Don't worry, Brett.
I'm like, what does that mean? Is this, like, far as McDonald's?
Imagine how far the McDonald's next to the library is.
No.
It's like that, but
oh,
up there.
Oh, God.
Anyway, it's really far away. Further, it's not.
No one questioned it.
I mean, it's beyond.
How far was it? Huh?
It's off the Earth. So she had this, like, she had this whole star map in her mind.
That ain't that impressive.
She had this whole star map in her mind of, from the vantage point of some other star system, and several other scientists have agreed that that's probably what it is, and some other people haven't. But basically, the hypnotist said that he couldn't have any. He didn't really have any explanation for what they experienced beyond maybe it was her nightmares and they both started talking about them and got them in their heads or whatever. But, I mean, everything about it just sounds like so real and disturbing to me.
It is disturbing and terrifying. It could be one of those things where they did talk about it and they got the details in their heads, but it's enough little pieces to it that, you know, bring a tear to your eye if you have any type of emotion or belief in that type of thing.
I mean, yeah, I feel like just the idea of, like, that missing time and something you can't explain like that. Yeah, just all the weird coincidences. It all just feels very real. It was made into a movie in the mid-60s with James Earl Jones and, what's her name? Estelle Parsons.
Okay.
James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons, called The UFO Incident. There's a famous book put out, which is the book that
So James Earl Jones plays the main guy?
Mm-hmm. It was an interracial couple in 61. They were both part of the NAACP.
It was an interracial couple?
James
in 61?
Earl Jones, yeah.
So that's interesting. That makes me wonder,
if it was the Ku Klux Klan messing with them?
Yeah,
like
maybe.
Like the X-Files episode. You ever seen the X-Files episode where all the Klan is like aliens?
Are you talking about the baseball one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That one's scary.
I've been sick all weekend and all I did was watch the X-Files.
Did you watch that one?
No, I've been working my way up through season 8.
Well, was that it?
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
No, that's a success. You creep me out, Brett. I'm wondering if you're going to top.
No, that was an incredible story. Like, I've heard the story before, but you filled me in on things that I didn't know about it, and I believe them. I don't know.
And I believe them too. Like, they have no reason to lie. They never sought publicity. Like, yeah.
I don't know if it's aliens or not, or if it's just like, you know, government. But it's something, and it's out there.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the government when they reported it to the Air Force right after it happened. And they said, well, Jupiter was pretty bright that night. Are you sure it wasn't just that? But the Air Force actually passed it along to Project Blue Book, which was the classified portion of the CIA or whatever, the government that dealt with UFO, like looking into actual UFO things. So the government could have just been investigating it. But I mean, yeah, they took it seriously enough to investigate it.
Well, I brought my tale today.
Yeah, what would you bring in class?
Did you
do your homework, Brett?
I did do my homework. I waited last minute, but...
That's all right.
I did do my homework, and I like to pass my tales and stories in the form of song.
Ooh. Oh. It's my favorite part of the show, where Brett plays the song.
A signal man from Chapel Hill fell on the tracks, but he still wasn't killed. Lying there on his iron bed, he was hit by a train and it severed his head. Now the station's closed, but at night it said you can still see his body searching around for his head. So don't you park on the tracks till you see a headless body with a light burning furiously. We try to move, your car won't start until the random train passes. Scare the shit out of humans.
Wow. I gotta tell you, if I wasn't already writing my scarecrow slasher horror movie ode to horror movie that I'm writing, I would start writing on that Chapel Hill horror story immediately. Like, that sounds like awesome. That's ghost stories and UFO stories all at one. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah, like, that's something I was able to dig up today, actually.
Wow.
There was
one... You guys want to make that movie eventually?
We probably could.
Probably already have.
But
did we make that last year?
Yeah, no, there was a ghost story from Columbia. Like, when my family moved to Tennessee, we moved when I was six to this little town called Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
It's south of Nashville. And I was
friendly little town.
Yeah, just a quiet little town. So there was a couple ghost stories that I was investigating.
With the quiet.
I called up my sister to get some of the deets on one of these ones, and she laid me on to this this Chapel Hill story, which is
I feel like I've heard Chapel Hill, the name, like
I think there were, like, when I looked it up actually, just to get a few more details for the song, that I had to get specific when I was looking for it. But here's the story, if you didn't catch it in the lyrics.
I did, but I wanted to break it down.
Okay. Yeah, no, there was just one of those light bearers, for the who helps the trains get by.
Right.
Was on a dark and rainy night, slipped and he fell unconscious and got hit by a train.
Sucks to be him.
And they found his body clean. They were able to identify him, but they never found his head. So
that's just like terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, where does that thing go? Who takes a head?
Oh my god, I was just thinking, if I found a head, I would totally take that. I wouldn't keep it or anything. Or maybe I would, but either way, I would take the head definitely. If I had a chance, if it was when was this?
I couldn't find a year. That's one of the things.
If he's still fucking using a lantern out of the train. Yeah. That's like 1800.
Yeah. So let's say it's the 1800s. Like, okay, in real life, I would see a head and I'd be like, oh man, I wish I could take that. But I'd be like, well, I definitely can't. 1800s, though, I'm walking around and I see just a guy's head laying there. That would be totally mine. Like, I would keep that.
You're like, that's going to be my new mailbox.
No, yeah. It'd be my mailbox until the birds pick it clean. Then there'd be a sweet heart candle sitting on top of it. That's what I'd use it for. Like, I would love to get a little head. Or a fully grown human head as well.
Apparently, if you park on the tracks, you can look and you can see him walking around, with his lantern. Multiple people have said their car stalls out on at the tracks, as they're crossing, or just if they stopped on the tracks to look at them, and then when they went to start it back up, it wouldn't start. Originally, it was proposed as a UFO challenge. Mm-hmm. So when I was looking up ghost stories, I even said to myself, "Damn it!" When I was on the phone with my sister, I was like, "Oh no, these are ghost stories. I'm looking up UFO stories."
Right.
And then she says that apparently.
By the way,
there's also lights in the sky. And people report UFOs there too.
Yes.
So perfect. I was like, yes.
And it's the greatest episode of Scooby Doo ever.
Yeah, yeah. So that was my take on it. Is if it is a real ghost story, then the aliens have recognized it as a neat spot on Earth, and they like to watch it and see what kind of wacky stuff goes down there. Maybe they even stall out the cars to help freak people out and play lights to goof with people.
Maybe so.
Can I give my theory on
area? What happened in Chapel Hill?
No, I feel there's areas of some sort of weird energy or something like that. And basically, that's a place where our dimension has some sort of porthole. So there, a lot of people say aliens.
The head went through the porthole.
Well, maybe.
Ooh, there you go.
That, I'd like to think so. But no, aliens, are sometimes thought of as being, interdimensional travelers, because that's how they could actually get from one side of the, mm-hmm. Universe to another or some shit like that. So, it's a place where aliens have, a wormhole into our area, and where, ghosts in the spirit world, too, is kind of, pouring out, and there's, a strong, sense of that. I feel like that's what's going on.
No,
I think that's what Dan Aykroyd would say.
I think those are both valid theories, and that's definitely what Dan Aykroyd would say.
If there was some sort of pirate curse there, then it'd be a pirate curse, the aliens, a haunted railroad. It would really be it'd be triple filtered from the invisible world. Just some sort of... It's an area that, has a reach from another dimension, Brett. I'm reaching my hands towards your face right now. It doesn't help the audience, but I know I'm.
No, it's
out.
Creeping me out. Good, and that's probably what it's like. People are sitting in their cars, mm-hmm. and they don't even realize that they have interdimensional beasts pawing at their face.
Yeah,
just ready to fuck with them.
Mm-hmm. Like the fog or the mist.
Yeah, and it's just going on, and they don't even see it because their pineal glands aren't adjusted to see. What's right in front of them.
That's what Dan Aykroyd's original draft of Ghostbusters was all about, baby.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
They're interdimensional Ghostbusters, uh-huh. right? Yeah. But no, yeah, definitely. That's something I've always been afraid of, Brett. The idea that if you saw something from another dimension, or you saw something that was truly upsetting, your mind wouldn't allow you to deal with that, and you would just go along not realizing you saw it. And that's upsetting.
I think people like us would accept it because we're so used to the weird and abnormal, and just we're always looking for those things. So I feel like if we did see it, we would be like, hey... Yes, we were right.
I mean, in a world where the three of us can accept Charlie Metz as a person, I think...
I'm still...
What world is that?
I'm still working...
This other dimension that's coming through in Chapel Hill.
I accepted Charlie Metz as a person a long time ago. What I'm still dealing with is accepting him as is an unintentional rambler. That Ooh. Is something I cannot accept. But I will. In time.
Brett, I...
When the healing is over.
Brett, I got you a little commemorative trophy for the song that you made.
The first Aykroyd Award.
I knew it would be so good, so I packed this for you.
Oh my god! I don't know what to say.
You never won one of these before?
I never have. Oh my god.
But I knew you'd nail it on the first take.
I didn't know that.
You made it take it off?
Yeah. You look like you just got anal probe.
You look like Nosferatu. You're doing the Max Shrek pose and all that.
Oh man, that was terrifying the way your body moved. You got the moves, that jack.
Oh my god. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
The Dizzy Ramblers will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
This week's episode is sponsored by My Family's Home Cooking.
I think we deliver what other podcasts wouldn't.
Some balls.
Some balls in your spaghetti.
Oh my god. My mom makes balls. The best meatballs. She really does. Have you had my mom's meatballs, Brett?
I think I have, yeah.
Pretty good.
Everything your mom makes is real tasty.
She's good, yeah. I compliment both my mother and my father on being good cooks. Manja! You're not gonna get any of it, audience, but I enjoy it, so fuck off.
Yeah, I get on it sometimes too. It's good home cooking.
Bet you wish you could have that. If I've said this once, I've said it 1,000 times. I wish there were more truly scary alien movies. Like, there's no, there's very few, and it's such a, they're so scary, I think I probably said this in the last Dan Aykroyd podcast, but I stand by it, Brett.
So, you don't like Alien, right?
Oh, I love Alien.
I thought you said you didn't.
Just... No, I hate Aliens.
Oh, well.
I love Alien.
You know what
I like them both, but...
I call that offensive. Yeah, I like them both, too. I don't know why you wouldn't.
I mean, one's my favorite and the one that I've seen the most, but I like that whole franchise. I like everything it does.
I like all four.
I like the Alien versus Predator movies. I like the Predator movies. I like them all, baby.
Well, that's going a little crazy, but I do like all four.
I like AVP.
I like all four Alien movies, and I like AVP.
And I like Freddy versus Jason too.
Boo! I love Freddy versus Jason. High five for
Freddy. Oh, God. Man, what assholes.
You're the asshole, man.
Harry Manfredi spinning in his grave.
You're the asshole because you haven't broken down to me the secrets that Dan Aykroyd wanted spilled.
What secrets do I have that Dan Aykroyd spilled?
I thought you knew things, man.
Secrets
I thought you were told.
Triple filtered from the invisible world.
But that's what everyone keeps on saying, Brett. That I have these fucking secrets from Dan Aykroyd, but I don't, John. I don't have any goddamn secrets, alright?
I thought you were gonna talk about it's how, over. Like, he knew...
Dan Aykroyd doesn't exist, John. I don't believe. I was pretending to believe because you guys had faith, and I didn't want you to lose that, but I don't really believe that Dan Aykroyd exists, okay?
We talked about...
I just thought I was helping you guys, and giving you guys... I thought I was giving you guys, like, focus for once, but I have to admit now. I'm just like a Ron Hubbard. There's no Dan Aykroyd.
You know, we mentioned how Neighbors wouldn't have happened without my dad.
That's true.
My dad's been asking me, there's been theories that you've been talking about that I've been promoting to my dad, and he's been like, well, what's this about? I'm like, I don't know. Listen to the podcast episode and you'll know. So you're telling me he's going to listen and he's not going to get the answers he seeks? He's like, what 9/11 conspiracy is Dan Aykroyd involved in? And I'm like, listen to the podcast. Like, you don't know anything? Brett, tell me about an airport this
why should I
something.
Speak?
The Denver International Airport.
Are you going to say Nuggets?
And tell me about that because Sam's boring me right now with his nonsense of non-Dan Aykroyd facts.
The Denver International Airport is located in Denver, Colorado.
No, you know what I'm going to do? Brett.
Looks like a swastika.
Brett, be quiet.
Has a giant bucking horse with an erect penis.
Sam's disappointing me. Sam's
disappointing me. Dickle, right?
Glowing red eyes.
Sam's disappointed me so much, I'm going to resort to the last straw, the last thing I'd ever want to resort to. I want to talk to T. Ryder.
You set me up. You set me up to get to this segment, so I hope you enjoyed. I hope this segment is really entertaining. I'm glad it was worth defaming my character
for,
John.
Did somebody say trickster?
I was tricked, so fuck you guys. Take over, trickster.
Yeah, trick. What's your whole opinion on the alien thing and the whole alien conspiracy thing? Where do you buy that? I know we talked about the reptilian thing a little bit a few episodes back.
Well, what's there to even say? We all know they're here. We all know what they're doing.
We all know they're queer.
They don't want any more bears.
Well,
but I'll never tell.
I'd like to agree with you, but I just, you know, stories like this don't necessarily completely sway me towards the alien side. Like, I don't know.
What in stories like what?
Stories like the Sam and Brett's.
You don't like the Barney and Betty Rubble's abduction? And
there were an alien on the Flintstones, the Great Gazoo.
Great, oh no, yes, he's quite the devil, isn't he?
I love him.
Yeah, do you think that's something I love is Trickster. Can you speak on this at all? The connection between aliens and demons and possible aliens being confused for what they actually are, like satanic.
That's interesting. Yeah, they could be.
But you have to ask, why would they wipe their memories and extinguish their pain if they were demons?
It's all just a matter of perspective.
Whoa, that's deep. But,
how could these terrible, terribly terrifying stories not swayed you? I found both tales were just terrifying, almost triple filtered from the invisible world.
I guess I'm
you
just
might say.
No, really? Well, I'm just skeptic, like Scully is. I guess I don't know. I'm just not completely.
You're a regular John Doggett, aren't you?
Well, no, I believe. I guess I would be. No, I love being compared to Robert Patrick. That's the biggest honor you can bestow upon a poor little smuck from Brooklyn like me. And I don't know. I believe some things. Some things I partially believe in, and this is one of those things that I have my theories and my opinions and my thoughts and my doubts, but I'm just not completely. I don't know. I don't know if I'm 100% sure that aliens do exist.
Well, whether or not the Chapel Hill monster is real, or Barty and Betty Page got abducted by aliens,
she had a crazy life.
Well, I can assure you all one thing.
Sorry. You try to be sincere, Trickster. I find ridiculous. Yes.
I can assure you all one thing. The Trickster is under your bed.
Well, that's very spooky to me. Did you watch the movie with us? Were you here for the feature?
Yes.
What'd you I'm think about here. It? Did you enjoy Dan Aykroyd? Did you enjoy Dan Aykroyd? Did you think he was an alien?
He was one of those Nordic, style aliens who are, trying to, warn mankind of, the reptilians.
I think so. Hey, Trickster. I see you have some meat there that you're eating on. What is that?
I have a handful of hot dog that I grabbed on the way out. You know how it is.
God, you're gonna have to get your fucking mop bucket because I'm gonna get sick soon, Trickster. You're the janitor here, right?
Oh, yes. Let me go put on my hat.
So that's what shows is interesting about progression and employment. Trickster T started out as our mild-mannered janitor. He worked his way up to floor manager. He's done some sound work with us now. Now he's like...
No, I thought he was our band leader.
Now he's like...
And then he became a janitor.
Was that what it was?
The Trickster was originally the band leader and like...
We never knew.
Yeah,
we never knew he was a janitor.
He's been the band leader and he put on a disguise and worked his way to the top.
Oh, okay.
And like, I guess his... Now he's just like an intern on the show and then like he chimes in.
Our own chronology confuses me. And
yeah, it's very confusing.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, he's a real dick.
Much like Neighbors. It's confusing.
He's doing this whole elaborate show behind the scenes that we're supposed to care about. It's just so confusing.
Well, Sam, you can go fuck yourself.
Can you spare a minute for a little segment here? Well, we've said a lot of things that were going to come up in this episode. I'd like to pitch something for the next Aykroyd episode.
Uh-oh.
I have a Rambler challenge for the two of you.
Oh, no.
For next Aykroyd. It's to find a government conspiracy theory that's disturbing and true. And I'll give you an example of what I mean by that right now. Operation Northwoods.
What year?
1962.
It's always the 60s.
It's a weird time. Because actually, yeah, I feel like after the 60s, the government was a lot more secretive about shit. The, Joint Chiefs of Staff drafted and signed this proposal, basically. And it got so far to be sent to the Secretary of Defense, and then JFK finally got it and, like, completely vetoed it and said they couldn't do it. The idea was for the CIA to start doing a bunch of bombings and terrorist attacks and hijackings on American soil and frame Cuba for it. And they would just start being all these, planes that would get hijacked and, like, crashed and stuff. And, like, just bombings in Miami and stuff. Just, framing Cuban people. And they would, like, sink...
I forgot this didn't have to do with aliens. I was like, when is the UFOs going to come into this?
No, yeah, this is just government conspiracy. And they would, like, kill a bunch of Cubans coming over in boats from Cuba trying to get to Florida and stuff. And it got as far to go to JFK, and he completely vetoed it. And no one knew about it. No one knew about that until 1996.
Yeah, I think at some point, like after the 60s, like all the government just like decided that, like, hey, I guess we don't really, like, have to tell people what we're doing, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, they're like, yeah, I guess we could just, like, not tell them and be like, we don't have to tell you.
I mean, that's, like, what you can see happening, I guess, with Nixon, where he starts getting way more secretive, and then after that, it's just, like, government policy to be completely secretive.
Yeah. You're right. It was a long enough time after World War II where people were like, hey, we're not that friendly with each other. We don't have to be completely all, like, informative.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't know won't hurt you. And that's kind of true. It's like they say in Man of Steel. What would people do if they knew, if it was official that aliens existed? And, like, how would they react? That's what made Man of Steel such a good movie, Sam, like you put it. Like, it's really, the first half of it's like an alien invasion.
Oh, yeah, that's why I like the movie so much.
No, I'm happy with you guys. I'm happy with Neighbors. Sam, you turned me.
Yeah.
You changed my views.
Yeah, we're all trying to get in the door.
Yeah.
With the trickster.
Can that be it?
The trickster's like, oh my god, with his crushed red helmet suit.
Oh, it's gotta be that.
You're right, yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, the government's pretty shady, it's very disturbing. If you want to draw crazy conclusions, if you want to say things like, if that's what the government was doing back then, you know, who knows why in, you know, September 11, 2001, there was a senator who was about to fly on a airline, and the CIA told him not to.
Ooh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I've become a big suspector of foul play afoot on September 11th.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel like I don't want to sound like Victoria Jackson or anything, but
who we have not yet introduced to the audience.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll never have to. Someday we will, though. But yeah, I feel like, I mean, the government definitely knew something was going to happen. There was so many different, like, the head of national security or whatever was warning Bush, telling him something was going to happen, and he was just ignoring it basically. And then they just allowed it to happen, so we go to war with Iraq.
Do you think it was more like something was a plan and they got wind of it and just let it happen?
Yeah, I think so. I bet they... I wouldn't think they would think it would be as big as it was, I guess. But I feel like they'd let... I mean, it's just like... I mean, I think once
just
you...
Just as an excuse to start the war.
Yeah, I mean, once you see something like Operation Northwoods, I feel like it just shows that the government is capable of just doing really fucked up stuff. Like, that proposal was written and signed by all the Joint Chiefs of Staff that American civilians would be targeted and there'd be bombings and stuff within the U.S. and around, like, other countries surrounding Cuba to make it look like there's terrorist attacks by Cubans.
Well, I accept your challenge.
I'm
very eager to get to it. I can't wait to pick out what... heinous act I want to highlight and whistleblow on the Dizzy Rambler show.
Sweet. I mean,
fuck the NSA.
If we make it that long, like our names are on the hot list now.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's right. I said fuck them.
I think what no matter what happened,
I don't want to come off threatening or anything. like we're not anti-government, yeah. Anti-establishment nutballs. We're just. Open-minded individuals who
see corruption going on.
Yeah, and we want you, the listener, to understand your world that you're living in and appreciate freedom as you have it, because
it might not last forever.
Okay, that's one way of putting it.
These are just crazy conspiracy theories. You know, who knows?
Yeah,
except for that thing I just said. That's a declassified document.
They got to be real, though.
No, they do have to be real.
Yeah, they got
to
be real. So I'm gonna make sure whatever I pick out is legit.
That's what this is: a declassified document that came out in like '96 or so. Once some of the Warren Commission stuff on the Kennedy assassination and investigation was declassified.
I mean, I'm sure the government's just like anything else. There's the good ones and the bad ones. The ones you can trust. The ones you can't trust. And just like anyone in power, like, there's always going to be the ones who take it to an extreme level and start all kinds of shady shit.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is knowing which ones are which, and hopefully the bad ones go out of power sooner rather than later. And that's all we can really hope for.
Mm-hmm. Man, you should find a conspiracy theory about the Vatican, like some fucked up thing about that.
Mm, no, cool. I have access. I have access to some cool shit,
about the Vatican.
No, about conspiracy theories.
Oh, fuck.
I'm really worried about that. If you want me to find something, I'm gonna go out.
Brad, you're sleeping with me in my house tonight.
Yeah, guys, do you remember that story where Dan Aykroyd saw that limo there that one time, then he turned around and was gone?
Yeah.
I don't want that stuff to start happening to me.
Me either. Yeah. And our problem is we don't know if it's fans or FBI.
I hope it's a mixture of both.
Well, you're gonna get quite the tale of terror.
This is too much for me. I think we're through the looking glass here, people.
Yeah, we've really overstepped our bounds here. I think we weren't intended to provide these answers, much less ask the questions.
I'm Dizzy spooking Ramblers. Myself right now.
That's why we're the Dizzy Ramblers. That's why we're the best podcast out there.
Because we scare ourselves.
ourselves into tears.
Yeah.
Brett, did you cry at any point during this podcast?
No.
Well, Brett's a tin man.
I am the tin man.
All right, you didn't cry during Dark Knight Rises either, so you're a fucking pussy, bitch.
But you know what? I did propose the cry contest for at one point.
I told you I ain't having a crying contest on the podcast, so we have a kissing contest.
Mine's so much more
what, sanitary?
Yeah, sanitary.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Since when did that ever get you anywhere?
Well,
when did keeping your tongue out of people's mouths get you anywhere, Brett?
The Dizzy Ramblers will return after these brief promotional messages.
The Dizzy Ramblers are on iTunes, man?
Not only are they on iTunes, they're inside of iTunes. We're thrusting back and forth inside that baby right now.
How much are we charging for that shit? Like $2.99 type of deal?
That's what you'd expect.
The Dizzy Ramblers are completely ka-ching, $0.
Yeah, baby. Didn't. Hey, me too.
I really feel like I've learned a lot tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I want listeners to know that this is going to continue in our future Aykroyd episodes. It's going to be just as informative with all kinds of, like Dan Aykroyd would want, UFO trivia and factoids about conspiracies and things you may or may not be aware that are going on around you every day, like the reptilian aliens that are running among us that our floor manager and band leader know all about.
When we talk about Dan Aykroyd, we're talking about Dan Aykroyd that's spelled with two N's and an E.
That's right.
And Aykroyd spelled AKROID, right?
That's the one.
Okay, Dan Aykroyd. That's the Dan Aykroyd I love and I believes in all this that we're saying. But I'll tell you one thing.
He'll endorse it, I'm sure, too. Yeah.
With his moonshine that
he brings
down.
Yeah. He smuggles down moonshine from the moon Death Star that the reptilians live in.
Puts it in dog skulls.
We don't represent Dan Aykroyd in any way, but we study him closely, and we try to our best ability, share what we believe a lot of his opinions are and things.
We're all just having fun.
And it's going to be a quick one. Just join hands with me, brothers of Aykroyd.
Oh. Wish Lola was here.
Aykroyd, for us and our fathers.
Forever and ever. Amen.
Aykroyd.
Wow.
I believe in that.
Powerful. Powerful stuff. Is happening in the studio tonight.
I feel like we're on the
Oprah Winfrey show.
Well, kind of, but no, I feel more like I'm on like the 700 Club or whatever that televangelist show.
The audience can't see this, but there's like a little camera or candle that's the only thing lighting up the Rambler studio, and it really is a creepy episode. And if a camera was looking at us, there could be a number, like it says, like 1-800, like Aykroyd.
Yeah.
And it looked like we were like trying to sell them like the sacrament of Aykroyd.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is we're, like I said, we're through the looking glass. This is really one of those episodes that I hope will make you guys want to take the, I don't know.
Plunge.
No, I guess lock your doors at night and bolt your windows.
I'm gonna, like I said, when I get back to my house and I'm sitting on my patio watching
Frasier
X-Files or a horror documentary or something. Like, I'm going to be a little creeped out because I've been on that cake lately, so this isn't going to help. But I when I signed up for this is my final ramble. Mm. When I agreed to do this by having the idea for the Aykroyds, this was not what I signed up for, first of all. Like, I just wanted a fun award show, maybe give out some prizes, have some laughs. And then we got into this whole Dan Aykroyd lifestyle. Like, we started dressing like him, acting like him, becoming him, wearing blue contact lenses around all the time, knocking on our neighbors' doors. They haven't been able to get a moment rest, except tonight when we've been in the studio. But it's pretty crazy what this has become. I never realized this would become so terrifying and so insanely creepy <Yeah. laughs> while we were recording these. That's one thing about having a low-level crew is, like, we're not surrounded by cameramen. We're not surrounded by people holding sound equipment. Like, it's just us, typically, in the studio. T's around, but he's you know, the creepiest thing in the world. He's a fucking demon. So, like, it's or spooky. It's not October yet. It's spooky. Yeah, it's not October yet, but it's a spooky, spooky night in the Rambler studio. And I hope whatever you're doing tonight, whatever you're doing at home or listening, wherever you are, that you're creeped out a little bit, too, because you're not safe.
Yeah, like,
I'm out.
Yeah, I won't be watching the X-Files tonight. I'll be watching the Rockford Files instead. Because I am too creeped out.
You watched the whole 2-hour pilot yet?
Oh, yeah.
But I've never been able to get awesome. Through. Did you watch The Murder She Wrote? Dun, 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 dun. Especially the Sanford and Son two-parter crossover with Murder, She Wrote.
Yep.
When she solves the murder at the junkyard.
But just by coincidence, we weren't intending to bring this up. I don't know how we got on Murder, She Wrote, of all things.
Ooh,
but the pilot first rehearsal episode of the Dizzy Ramblers podcast was on the pilot to Murder, She Wrote.
That's true.
And it was terrible, and we'll never air it. But
someday we're going to do another Murder, She Wrote.
Someday we'll do another Murder, She Wrote. But sooner than that, we're going to be doing a Diagnosis Murder Night as part of our Nick at Night month-long event or whatever.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't scare me, you guys.
I'm already getting scared thinking about it.
it's pretty scary.
We're going to have that spooky creep with the werewolf wig on Jesse Davis here, won't we?
Yeah, that's going to be happening sometime before the end of the summer. And then, man, yeah, are we still doing that Tron event?
That Tron event is happening, and it's crappening as far as I'm concerned, right?
Doing it in the middle of the road.
No, it'll be great. We'll have all this leading up. Whenever we do the Tron sleepover, whenever it works for everyone's schedules will be great. And then we have October happening. It's going to be a fucking awesome month. We've got a big October planned. We've got events planned for the rest of you guys for the rest of the year.
This is the year of Dan Aykroyd, so I think it's the appropriate year to really start kickstarting just our amazing, I mean, just kicking it in high gear. We thought we were in high gear.
Yeah, like you said, like kicking it into high gear and turning it up to 11. Like, we were riding 10 through the summer games, and it was hard to get through those. And then
we knew how hard it was for the audience as well.
Oh yeah,
to get through those.
No, I stand by it, and that was a cool thing. We got that Alex episode out there really quick. That's great, and I feel like it's been a little while since we've been in the studio, and it feels good. It felt good potting with you guys today.
No, it really did.
And it felt good having the audience listen. You guys are great.
No, I loved the experience. I loved everything about it. Next week, we're going to be having a new guest on, our friend Brittany Brown, who is an entirely new type of experience for this podcast altogether. It's really great. You should listen to it.
Yeah.
You think it'll be great when we record it, right, Jen?
Oh, I know it'll be great when we record it.
It's going to be terrible.
Yeah, that's a disturbing episode,
I sense. Yeah, no, it's a disturbing, upsetting episode.
Yeah, I sense it'll be as disturbing as this, but it'll be more disturbing because people will be like, yeesh, what's the matter with these people?
Yeah.
Do you? I was about to say, it was a fun night, and two of us have spoken our final words. Someone has yet to fill the void, to complete the triad of,
we got a Sam filibuster!
What? I haven't even spoken yet!
He's flipping through the phone book. He's mute. He's sign languaging the phone numbers in the phone
book. That's gonna be your for sure, right?
Yeah, it is. I'm going to read every page of my notes on the Barney and Betty Hill. I'm going to read it by this can of whoops, and it lit on fire. No, I would like to say seriously to Dan Aykroyd, I'm a humongous fan, but you know that because I telepathically tell it to you every night. I know you can hear me. I know. Yep, I know you could hear that too, even though I didn't speak it out loud to be recorded by this man-made machine. I'll do what you tell me to do. Good night.
He's a blank canvas. Anything you say.
He's told me plenty, Brad.
Are you sure it's Aykroyd?
I don't know. It's a very deep voice. It doesn't sound like Dan Aykroyd.
I don't like... assumed. Yeah. You have James Earl Jones. You have James Earl Jones talking in your head. And you assumed it was Dan Aykroyd.
Sam, you must kill. Dan Aykroyd, is that you?
You know what?
Yes.
You know what, actually? Now that I'm thinking about it, it really only started after Michael Clark Duncan died. I think Michael Clark Duncan might be stuck in my Murphy bed.
Your Nathan Murphy bed?
No, just my regular Murphy bed. My Nathan Murphy bed's, you know...
down in the basement.
Yeah, that's something I'm talking about on the air.
If you're wearing your They Live glasses, when you take down your Murphy bed, he like comes down with it. He's like, hey, what are we watching tonight?
Well, Brett...
I mean, now that he's away from Omarosa, he's happier than he's ever been. Just kidding, I'm sure she's genuinely sad that her fiancé is dead. R.I.P. Michael Clark Duncan.
Well, yeah, definitely. He's missed. Brett, I'm glad your worn-down pickup truck broke down and ran out of gas, and I had to give you a ride to the studio tonight because I feel spooky walking out to my car. I don't want to be out there by myself.
Yeah,
I'm glad that you're with me for the ride.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to carry me out like Shaggy carrying Scoob. Like, my knees are shaking so much, I don't even know if I can leave.
John, give me a text when you get home in 3 hours.
Yeah, I know, right? Who knows what'll happen tonight?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think as scared as I am that it's time for this Rambler to travel.
I wish Dan Aykroyd was my neighbor. I wish I could watch him bathe. I'm saying, like the movie Neighbors, you know? Yeah, I'll be traveling to another dimension.
It's traveling time.
All right, like it's traveling time.
With Dan Aykroyd.
Firmly in the chat. Now we've come to the end and we gotta get back on the run. But no, we're always thinking of you as we ride into that settling sun. Yeah, the Rambler's got to travel, so goodbye to everyone. It's traveling time.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was rude of me.
He'll be listening on like a bus or something like that, editing on his laptop, and he'll blow his ears out.
Yeah.